Hey guys, Eric here, and I want to talk to you real quick about thedailydownforce.com. Every day, this website covers the latest news and trends in NASCAR, from silly season right through the checkered flag in Phoenix. Need a new morning routine as soon as you wake up? Well, now you have it, dailydownforce.com. This is the website I use to keep up with the industry, the drivers, and of course, what the community is talking about. And speaking of community, dailydownforce.com is also home to some of your other favorite NASCAR content creators. Plus, they've got all sorts of information that I like to keep bookmarked, like schedules, penalties, ratings, and everything you want to know. Oh, and be sure to check out the merch shop while you're there to find some exclusive diecasts and collectibles. So check out dailydownforce.com, that's dailydownforce.com, and I'll see you in the replies.
Hey there, NASCAR fans. Have you got your copy of the latest edition of NASCAR Pole Position Print Magazine? If not, there's no better time than now to subscribe at polepositionmag.com. NASCAR Pole Position is the only print magazine covering NASCAR. Officially licensed by NASCAR, NASCAR Pole Position Magazine is published throughout the NASCAR season, and each edition is an instant collector's item, packed with great feature stories and photography. The magazine is even mailed to you in a poly bag for those who love to collect NASCAR memorabilia. At PolePositionMag.com, you can even find past issues available to purchase. Get your subscription to NASCAR Pole Position and get great NASCAR content delivered straight to your mailbox throughout the season. Learn more at PolePositionMag.com. That's PolePositionMag.com.
Hey y'all, Rick Houston here, and I want to tell you about my new show, the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast. I've partnered up with the State of North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources to help uncover the history behind moonshining mountain boys, professional wheelmen, and the backwoods and city lights of the Tar Heel State. In the first episode, I sat down with Winston Kelly at the NASCAR Hall of Fame for a little behind-the-scenes gossip about Junior Johnson's engineering skills.
He's got two things in his hand, pipe wrench and channel lock pliers. And they weren't new. They had been around the block a time or two.
Wasn't the first deal they built, I bet.
No. The pliers had been red before, but paint had worn off.
And in the second episode, I talked to a professional hillbilly, a.k.a. Dr. Daniel Pierce, of UNC Asheville, to find out the real history of moonshiners and their battles with the revenuers.
He wrote about one of his experiences of trying to chase down this bootlegger and this souped-up car, and he complained that the government gave him these piece of crap, cheapo cars, and that were really no match, but he thought he was doing pretty good, and then the guy just hits it and just takes off and practically disappeared. But then the guy makes a bootleg turn and comes back towards him. And it, as he said, it was a game of chicken, and I was the chicken. And so he ran off the road. And actually, he was the guy who caught Junior Johnson at his daddy's still when Junior got tangled up in a barbed wire fence.
So check out the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast, available on YouTube, dailydownforce.com, and all of your favorite podcasting platforms. And be sure to check out my regular show on NASCAR history, the Scene Vault Podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to NWP on Danny B Talks tonight. Been a little bit since some content was here on the channel, but hey, we got a full 2-hour live show here tonight with me and the boys, Jarrett, Darian, and Eric. We're all gathered here today to talk about NASCAR. Let's get right into it after a dominating race by Hendrick Motorsports at Las Vegas. But first, I want to hear the hot takes. Jarrett, what you got to start us off?
All right. I'm just going to get ahead of this now I knew before the season it probably was going to be an iffy prediction, and if I got it right, I'd seem like a damn genius. Unfortunately, it was one of my dumbest predictions of the year, and I'm going to own up to it already with William Byron making the playoffs. But I will say this. I don't think I was unwarranted in my prediction because William Byron is just really hot and cold. Doesn't matter what season you look at, it's hot and cold, and there is no consistency there. So my hot take is this weekend, or at least a weekend adjacent to this one, in the sense of performance, should be the norm for William Byron. This should not be something that William Byron shouldn't dominate a race and win and us go, wow, that's shocking to see. He's a guy in a Hendrick car who's been in a Hendrick car for 6 years now and has never consistently put together a full season. He's had great runs where he will, say, go, you know, 15 weeks and all but two races are a top 10. And then he'll have runs like last year where he'll go 19 weeks with one or two top 10s. This needs to be consistent performance now. This needs to be the start of a big step because all three of his other teammates have shown, well, two of them are, you know, have won championships. One of them has won multiple races in four in a season. All three of his teammates have shown that they can do that. It's Byron's turn to do that now.
Fox Sports, man, what can you say? I mean, like, at this point, I mean, we're already three races into the 2023 season. So I feel like at some point, like, all the, you know, constant complaints are eventually just going to feel extremely old because, I mean, we still have, you know, a long way to go with them. But I have to give Danica Patrick her props. Like, she was way better than Clint Bowyer commentating the race. Like, honestly, like, and honestly, like, I felt like she brought most of the energy throughout the broadcast, too. Like, I don't know, like, I might be in the minority with that, but then when I posted something on Twitter about it, it, like, a lot of y'all agreed. So I wouldn't mind seeing Danica Patrick commentate more races, me personally. Maybe we can sort of experiment her and Tony Stewart, perhaps. Maybe, like, I don't know, like, I like their vibe in the booth, too. But, you know, unfortunately, Fox still has a long way to go. But, yeah, like, basically my hot take is I would prefer Danica Patrick's commentating over Clint Bowyer.
Okay, okay. Jared, don't feel too bad about not having William Byron in your preseason playoff predictions. In my video, I had him 16th. It took until the last second for me to convince myself that Byron was a legit playoff contender. So you weren't the only one questioning him. But my hot take, and I don't want to spoil my picks that we'll get to in about an hour and a half or so, but Ford this weekend at Las Vegas across the board struggled. Brad Keselowski ran like 9th or 10th for a lot of the race. He was by far the best Ford most of the day. Logano started on pole and dropped like a rock. So my hot take is that while Ford is off to a slower start than the other manufacturers, they haven't yet won a points race. It's been all Chevy and then Toyota won the Clash. I think Ford will bounce back in a big way at Phoenix this coming weekend. You look at last year, obviously the championship race, Logano and Blaney finished 1-2, but let's focus on Ryan Blaney for a second. He led over 100 laps in both Phoenix races. And if you look at Ford, so two races, two different top fives, six Fords made up those top fives. In that fall race, it was four Fords in the top five. Now, there's a new aero package this week. I think that's going to play to Ford's strengths because clearly they don't quite have a handle of the intermediate aero package, so it can't really get much worse. My hot take is that Ford, while they're off to a really slow start, is going to have a big weekend at Phoenix here in just a few days.
Jarrett was talking good praise about the drive of 24. And for good reason, he got the win. But I want to say that for the 48, surprise, surprise, Danny B is going to talk good about Alex Bowman. And I noted this on Twitter during the race. At one point, he was 18th after the first round of pit stops. And I noted he was just flying through the field. Him and Blake Harris, whatever combination they've got going with each other so far, is off to a great start. I'm really impressed to see what they've been able to do. So far, Alex Bowman is the only Hendrick driver to get a top 10 in every race that we've had, including Clash. And if you want to include a Clash in there, he's had top fives in three of the first four races of the year. So I'm liking what I'm seeing out of 48 this year. I didn't think he was going to be, you know, as fast as the 24 and the 5, and it proved that way, but he was still right up there with them to get the 1-2-3 finish. So for the 48, for a guy that people were saying last year should be fired, I think he's proving exactly why they've gave him that contract extension, and I expect big things in the future for the 48.
What'd you make of his Phoenix scheme that he's running this week, the orange and purple?
I mean, it's just basically the same scheme they have for the season, but I like the colors. It's always for a good cause and, you know, support the puppies.
Yeah. Nice colorway. I like the colorway.
So what do you think the chat's going to think? You know, I want to know what they think is the hottest take of the night.
We all had some pretty, three of us had some.
I can never tell if the chat's votes for who they actually thought had the spiciest take.
I always think
take.
It's a popularity contest.
Yeah, it's like whose take do they actually, I feel like whoever wins this vote actually has the most agreeable opinion, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Let me.
I won saying Mike Joy was not on.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
That was like a clear option.
I don't know. Like, I don't think any of ours were like really clear cut number one favorites, but hey, that makes for some great parody in the polls.
I'm curious to know what the chat thinks for sure. But thanks everyone for tuning in.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Good job, y'all.
Yes.
I forgot. I actually have to do the poll now.
I get the rest of it.
We had a race, didn't we?
We had a race
at your old home track, Darian.
Yeah, and honestly, that was like the one of the most typical Las Vegas races you'll ever see. You know, like, I mean, a lot of the younger fans didn't grow up with flat Las Vegas. So, like, whenever somebody says, like, oh, this Vegas race sucks, I'm like, go back and watch those races, man. Barely any passing. But the drivers love the track for obvious reasons because they had, you know, a lot more input, I guess, back in those days. I mean, there's still a lot of input today. But, you know, with those high bankings, you know, a lot can happen. A lot can happen. But it seemed like this race, this edition of the Las Vegas Spring Race was just another typical Vegas race. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad, neither. Honestly, like, I wouldn't even call it mid. I would just call it, like,
a race.
A race. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Like, we had another restart, too. So I feel like that sort of, like, you know, made the race better in some fans' eyes. But again, like, the way I judge races are, you know, the races as a whole. So as a whole, it was just, yeah, it was just a race where Hendrick Motorsports was 1-2-3. And we'll get
if you're that. If you're a Hendrick fan, you're probably happy with that. If you're not, then you're probably bored to death.
Yes. But the weather had a major factor, though. That's just typical Vegas. Whenever it's extremely cloudy like that for most of the race, you're not going to see as much passing. But that final stage, though, at the very beginning, once the sun peaked out a little bit, it started to get a little bit crazy, So. Hey, but props to William Byron, man. Like Jarrett said, this should be the norm from now on. Like, I don't know. Like, last year we saw him win two races. And then he basically just disappeared until the playoffs started. Hopefully we don't see that because, man, that 24 team, I mean, they were dominating. Like, I was shocked. Like, just the way he was able to drive ahead, you know, away from Kyle Larson there. And Kyle Larson is supposed to be, you know, the guy, right? But hey, William Byron, well, man. That potential might be fulfilled. We'll see.
I saw, I think it was Tyler Reddick had said that the next gen package at the moment, I think he said this on like Dale Jr. show, was like, he had said it's reverting back to the 550 package in a lot of ways. His teams are figuring it out, adding downforce on it more.
And we kind of thought this might happen eventually.
So yeah. I'm wondering if a lot of that dominance too is partly just, you know, between drivers and crew chief combinations. I mean, William Byron, I believe Rudy Fugel is his crew chief. Like, those two have always had good chemistry together. If they just, the two of them, just figured something out, knocked it out of the park, and Hendrick overall did.
They didn't win two races last year on accident. They probably should have had a third win at Darlington if you really want to think about it like that.
Yeah, and to Darian's point, I mean, higher banks than there used to be at Las Vegas, but also the cooler temperatures, that's always going to add grip in the track. It felt like on short runs, at least, they were close to full throttle around large portions of the racetrack. And anytime that happens, yeah, it's going to look like the 550 package. But, you know, they could pass. There was definitely passing. You just couldn't pass William Byron or Kyle Larson. That was the problem. I mean, Tyler Reddick from 40th or whatever, 36th to 15th in like 15 laps to start the race. That's some good stuff. That's some good content. To echo Darian's initial point, it was just it reminded me of intermediate races I would go see at Texas growing up. Like, I look forward to Texas Motor Speedway back when it was still good. I look forward to Texas Motor Speedway, even though a lot of people didn't really. It was just kind of another average race, but I look forward to it because you knew you weren't likely going to see anything crazy, a barn burner, wreck for the win, last lap pass. but it was always just a solid race. Multiple lanes, some comers, some goers, a surprise here or there. Solid race. And that's what I thought of Las Vegas. Stage three, when you had a couple of spins, a couple of wrecks, and a couple of restarts and some varying pit strategy at the end. Can we talk about that for just a moment? I'm shocked that nobody else stayed out the way Truex did. There are only 18 cars on the lead lap. Why, if you're like 15th, 16th, 17th, why would you not stay out and try to at least nab a top 10 when the worst you can finish is 18th? I don't know. That shocked me. I was surprised.
I'll say this. I think people should have, because we saw last year, I believe. And I remember this. But I remember this too. It doesn't necessarily, if you have enough cars, it won't take them two laps to get through. It'll take a little longer. Because if people remember last year, I had a good sum of money I could have won on Justin Haley, who had stayed out with 30 to go. And he held off the field for a while. And that car was like a mid-tier car. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Truex's car was pretty good and held him off for, I believe, you know, can't see where on the line exactly
they were side by side for on the back stretch.
Yeah, he held the lead for like half a lap, but he was second, I think, when they took the white flag.
But yeah, but so somebody, if a few stayed out, I agree they should have, but I'm not surprised because nobody ever stays out and does that anymore, like except for one or two maybe here or there, or the teams that do try it do it with like 30 or 40 to go. I don't understand the strategy with it when there is the ability to hold them off. I'm not surprised.
And also too, like, I mean, with the current playoff system we have, I mean, like, all you need is one win. So like,
yeah,
why not take the risk?
It baffles me why people don't, because they, you know, it's shown that multiple cars can get through. Tire strategy matters, but not to the point that it used to on, you know, like a higher horsepower package. You're burning off all the tires quicker and you have a higher reward. I don't understand why more teams don't take that risk. Especially mid-tech team.
Especially with 18 cars on the lead. I think it was 18. Mm-hmm. I'm like, the worst. I mean, I know there's a wreck, so I guess you risk being back there or something happening, there being a wreck, you get caught up in something. Yeah. But I guess that happens anywhere. I mean, that happened midfield. If you're ahead of it, I guess you're ahead of it. So I don't know. I was just surprised.
I'm looking at, why not Kyle Busch try it?
Yeah, he's looking at Keselowski. Keselowski was the one I looked at because I think he was lined up something like, I think he was 15th or so, and he'd been top 10 all day. I don't know why he'd faded a little bit towards the end, but he had been 15th all day. So I was convinced he'd been top 10 all day. So I was convinced he had a decent enough car that if he stays out, he's not going to win unless like five or six others stay out too. But he might've finished top five and probably at worst eighth or ninth. And that would have been a fantastic day that I thought they deserved, but they didn't do it.
And
instead he got caught up in that wreck, I think, with Allmendinger.
It's kind of funny that thing about that very last caution that we only saw MTJ be the only one who actually stayed out during that. Yeah. And I remember, I very much remember 2020 when it was coming down to Blaney and Bowman. They were going to battle each other to the win, it looked like, but then a caution came out in that one. Well, Blaney and Bowman pit, but almost everyone else stays out, and that killed them. They didn't even finish in top 10 in that one. So I just find it funny that more people didn't try just staying out, because I saw that decision to pit literally cost him the race back in 2020.
I see a shorty PJM saying Justin Haley P8, really excited about that. I believe he put on four tires at the end, so he had the opposite end.
I was going to point these very notable finishers out. Bubba Wallace P4, and you know, considering what happened the last time we raced at Las Vegas, this is a great result. Austin Cindric P6. The reason I'm high on this is because the Fords were pretty bad.
Did he also take four tires? Because he was not in the top 10 all day.
I think
he must have
taken
he just got in the right line on the restart and something happened. I don't know.
But considering Ford was very bad, then I mean, that's pretty solid. Then like you just mentioned, Justin Haley, P8. But also Daniel Suarez, I mean, he was P10. But he was very fast all day, though. It's just track positioning.
Final restart.
You know? Yeah.
And I think Suarez, like Bowman, is the only driver to have top 10s every week. Am I wrong about that? Has somebody else done it?
I can check.
No, I know Bowman and Suarez have. I don't know if anyone else has.
Which I know for Suarez, this race went a lot better. I think this was the one last year where he ended up like getting spun out and like hit the wall like two or three times or something like that.
So, yes, Alex Bowman and Daniel Suarez are the only two drivers to score a top 10 in every race so far. Oh, nice.
That's big.
Yeah.
What about Hendrick Motorsports, though? I don't want to gloss over that too much. I mean, one, two, three. If it wasn't Byron, it was going to be Larson before that final caution.
And really, I don't want to put anything bad on Josh Berry's performance. He literally didn't know he was going to be driving his car until the last minute. So
that's and I don't know, for some people to say like, oh, he sucked. Like, well yeah, he just.
And did he have like some sort of throttle issue? I couldn't tell if that was an actual mechanical problem or just a, hey, he's not familiar with how this car works problem.
It was a combination of both, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
He didn't get into the car officially until Saturday. I mean, we found out about, well, we'll get to that and later.
How long was the practice? Was it a 20-minute practice or was it a full hour?
It was 20 minutes. It was 20 minutes separated into groups.
Yeah.
Separated into
groups. I mean, it's not a lot of seat time.
You get him this week, he'll have his seat fitted better. I'm sure it was a very rushed fitting for that. He'll get more time on the simulator for it. You know, he'll probably be in a much better position.
And they're giving them an extra, they're giving everybody an extra hour of practice on Friday, I think, because of the new aero package that's being run. So
I know we harp on this all the time, but why does it have to take twisting NASCAR's arms to get practice? No other motorsport series motorsport series.
The TV providers. That's my biggest thing.
Well, they want more. It's NASCAR. That's just like, we need to keep the costs down. So no more practice and fire everyone.
Yeah. That's basically it.
That's their big plan.
Honestly, if they kept the current practice sessions, but added just one happy hour session, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah,
that'd be a lot better. That'd be way better.
All I need is 1 hour of practice
with everybody together. You know, no groups, none of that. Yeah. Just let them go.
Don't make them park it on pit road. If they want to go back into the garage and turn some gears, let them do it. Yeah. You know, and that would be fine. I would be very much appeased. I don't want 3 hours of practice because I do like that. You know, you might roll off Sunday and fire off wrong. You may not be great, and that might lead to a lot of early passing opportunities. But, you know, we need an hour. I agree with Jared. That should be the norm everywhere.
Yeah. But really quick, I mean, back to your earlier, I mean, we were going to talk about Hendrick Motorsports. Yeah. I don't want to gloss over. I mean, Hendrick Motorsports, man, I mean, top three. I mean, the way they got it to me was very scary because at first I thought, oh yeah, Penske's going to dominate this race. They always do. Logano was up front there. And then after about like 20, 30 laps, like just completely fell off the pace. And Hendrick, just all their cars, like really the Chevys in general, were just all gone. And then even Kevin Harvick on the radio said, yeah, the Fords are going to suck today.
And then really they probably could have been there sooner if it just wasn't for, I think, the 48 was a little slower in qualifying. That's why he was even back there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, and also considering that, you know, again, I mean, these mile and a half tracks make up, you know, a large portion of the schedule still. So if they're able to be that dominant right away, then it's going to be scary. But again, it's only one race so we'll see.
But you bring that up. Las Vegas for me is a litmus test on how good, like what teams are really good and set up for the season. And it can change as the season goes. But you're talking about more of them in the playoffs. I'm just thinking first round, Kansas Speedway. Then you look at the big one for me, though, is the third round. You look at Las Vegas, Homestead. Yeah, I know Homestead races a little differently, but still. Generally, the same principles go towards it. So if you're a Ford team, you really want to rely on Martinsville as your saving grace, like that one alone.
But you know what's the sad part about it is I was watching the Fox pre-race show, and even Joey Logano in his interview was like, the Ford, we're going to be really good. All the Penske cars are going to be really good.
What's
like,
he gonna say? We're going to suck?
But dude, I don't know. It's just, I didn't expect him to fall off that much.
No, I'm telling you, these cars are shit. They're just awful.
I didn't expect that much. Like, I was shocked.
Yeah, I was surprised they fell off that much because, I mean, Blaney and Logano both had the Pennzoil logo on the hood. It's the Pennzoil 400. Logano won this race.
He always wins. Yeah,
2 years ago.
He always
obviously won the fall race.
Last year he won, yeah.
Not counting the 9 car, looking at the next 6 races on the schedule, I'm willing to say that all 3 of the Hendrick cars will each have a win by these next 6 races.
I mean, if the Vegas race is any indicator, then yeah, I could totally see that. And then, I mean, if we want to talk about the drivers individually, I mean, we're on Danny's channel. We might as well start with Alex Bowman here, right? I mean, we're already seeing, you know, him benefit from the brand new crew chief.
I've had Coda circled since last year that I think he can win that one.
Yeah, so. That's a very interesting. Like, this is going to be a very interesting season. And it's just crazy because a lot of us, and I mean, even I had my doubts as well. I'm not going to lie. But I mean, some of y'all were like, oh, yeah, fired out of there and stuff. But like now it's like, hey, this was a put up or shut up type season. And already three races in, you're doing this good.
Ooh, like 2021.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, hey.
2021, he was up and down in 2021, though. The ups were really
hard. I'm saying going into 2021, people are like, okay, is like he actually good, or is he only good as a man?
Goes out there and
wins four races still.
You can make the argument, hey, he might have a better season than 2021.
Isaac is saying it was never McDowell supremacy. It's always been Blake Harris supremacy.
Hey, Harris is the magic man, bro.
That could be true. That could be true. He's been so consistent start this year. That could be true.
If he wins the championship with Bowman, I will start the show going, well, I'll make sure it's cool being on Eric's channel, but I'll go, Harris supremacy.
Yeah.
But you know what'll happen then, right? And Danny, you're not going to like this. This is the other side of that coin. Everyone's going to be like, see, it was never Bowman. It was always Blake Harris the whole damn time.
Yeah, yeah. Do that immediately.
I can see it now. Twitter, it would be lit up.
It was never William Byron. It was Fugel, and I guess that's a perfect segue.
Like, imagine what Corey LaJoie could do with Blake Harris, man.
He won twice last year. It was early both times. To get that win out of the way now, I just hope for consistency. I think, Jarrett, you mentioned it at the beginning that, you know, he went like 18 or 19 races last summer with one top 10 finish. Like, that's garbage. That's terrible. So can we get some consistency so that you're not going to the playoffs virtually ice cold? Like, that's all I ask.
Yeah, because he started off, you know, let's not get too far ahead. He started off last year very hot in the first few races, but
yeah.
Then basically it was like once Logano wrecked him at Darlington, that just took all his pride and he went away.
That's the ceiling there. Because we always talk about those debates back and forth about William Byron and Bowman. Like, we can't deny it. Whereas, like, my honest thoughts on it is that Bowman is the more consistent driver. He might not have the highest ceiling of anyone in the Cup Series, but you're not going to be a 25th place driver with Alex Bowman on a consistent basis. He's too good to be a 25th place guy. With William Byron, you have him like Chase Elliott championship level to start the year last year. But then you also, throughout the season, like, I think I was looking over that span that he like scored, you know, like in the mid 20s of points. He was like right around, you know, the colleague guys last year, the colleague teams, which is not the greatest to be around. There were a lot of teams outrunning that 24 car that shouldn't have been. So seeing him start out this hot, that's my only thing is you got to be more consistent because I don't see why anyone should take Byron seriously until he can prove throughout an entire regular season that it's not just a fluke. Like, I'll make it, but not a championship.
I need to see Byron honestly have the season that Chastain had last year, because Chastain was consistently usually in the top five, top 10 last year, and that's why he was in the championship four ultimately.
Yep. Yeah, right now it's all potential, and, you know, I thought he would have had, you know, success a lot sooner once Chad Knaus paired up with him and stuff, but I mean, he was still obviously learning, but obviously the Rudy Fugel pairing is obviously paying dividends. It's just, like you said, it's just he is so inconsistent, and I mean, I feel like his ceiling is, like, he does have all the potential to be the best Hendrick Motorsports driver. He does. I mean, it may sound crazy, but I mean, I feel like he has all the intangibles and stuff, but it's just he can't put it together on a consistent basis, unfortunately. And it's gonna say a lot if he remains inconsistent with Rudy Fugel, because it's like, okay, who's the problem here? You know what I mean? Because I mean, they have great chemistry, but it's like, if you can't be consistent, then I don't know. You might have to change something up, maybe. You know, but we're not at that point yet. We're still very early.
I don't think it's close yet. But
yeah, no,
I there needs to be improvement this year. Like, I think I know people are saying how young he is, and I get that. But this is also year six. Like, we're 6 years into this in the Cup Series.
But I just want to say this because I've been a follower of Hendrick pretty much my entire life, and I've always seen you know, majority of the time they have four drivers. Usually it was always there's Gordon, there's Johnson, there's two more cars. And that's how it was forever. I really can't say we've been at a point where, yeah, there's Larson, there's Elliott, there's Alex and William, but I can't say that they're not still a chance that they could win a championship either. Versus in years prior, I really thought the only two Hendrick caliber cars for a championship was going to be a 24 and a 48. Now, you know, I could see all four of them being there.
It's a very complete team.
It's the I'd say it's the most complete Hendrick since about 20, I'd say 14. Since 20, between 2012 and 2015.
Weird because when we saw this kind of rendition of them starting in 2018, people were saying they were dead.
When we started the show? Yeah.
And now we're saying the same thing about Gibbs.
Yeah. Oh.
Stuart Haas.
No, Stuart Haas.
No, Stuart Haas, yeah.
I don't know. Stuart Haas. Stuart Haas has been interesting.
I feel like Tony's a couple more bad seasons away from being a Fox broadcaster and NHRA driver.
Well, that's my thing with Stuart Haas. I know we're kind of getting sidetracked here, but it is my idea with Stuart Haas that makes it different than Hendrick or Gibbs is that the team owner seems just done being around NASCAR.
Tony is becoming a lot like Chip Ganassi, in my opinion. What I mean by that is he has so many hands and so many cookie jars that he can just exit right there.
One of those cookie jars is also the same place that his wife is at week in and week
out. That's true.
So.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
That's pretty big cookie jar.
But back to Hendrick.
The cookie jar could actually tell him where to reach if needed.
Let's just say Tony Stewart, he also can do whatever he wants with cookies because we know he likes to dip in soda too.
Soda cookies.
That's right. But the final Hendrick driver in the race, I mean, Kyle Larson, what else is there to
He's
say?
Kyle Larson.
It's just, yeah, typical Kyle Larson performance. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's not much else to add. I mean, it was interesting. This race was kind of lost for him on pit road because Byron's team got William out with two tires faster than Larson's team did two tires. It's a very small thing to note, but I just remember pit crew won Larson that championship in 2021, you know, in the final race. So it's just kind of something to follow. I think Larson's got one of the best pit crews, but I think so does Byron. So it's more of a Hendrick across. It's just Hendrick has no holes at this point.
Well, really, they all got good pit crews. And I know the last caution before the very last one, I think the 48 actually won the battle on pit road for that one.
Yeah, I mean, so they really just don't have any holes except for the 9 car at the moment, which we'll talk about in a few moments.
More of a bit of a break, but
it's a temper. It's like they dug a hole; they're gonna fill it in a few weeks, probably.
Yeah,
fill it at Coda. Like,
at the end of the year, that 9th probably still gonna have 2 wins. So
oh, it will. Yeah, but the 9 car is gonna be in the playoffs.
But they were kind of like Joey Logano in a sense; they were flying in this race.
Oh yeah, that Logano crash was for a spin. It was very dramatic.
I mean, the fact that he had all four wheels off the ground at
once. That's not the first time that's happened. That's actually pretty common at Las Vegas. I remember the first ever qualifying session on the new configuration. There were so many spins. Paul Menard had all four of his wheels up in the air. Yes. Oh, yeah. I missed that name.
Let's not forget the Rick Ware crash that was never on camera, that where the one photographer got the 15 like sideways on the wall, basically.
Yeah. I mean, again, Vegas is this. Hey, it's a mile and a half, but it's a very interesting mile and a half. A lot of character on it, too. A lot of character.
I like Vegas races. I'll be honest. I've been a little less forgiving than I think some fans. I gave it like a 4.5 out of 10 personally. I thought it was because I thought it was dull because there was really honestly the little bit of strategy there was for the most part inconsequential. The racing after the first stage, the second stage was brutal. I'm sorry, that second
give
stage.
You that. Like, yeah, second stage was brutal.
I think I go into Las Vegas races knowing like, okay, this isn't as bad as Texas, but it's not going to be like an auto club race either, so I don't need to get my hopes too high.
I was expecting, like, for me with Las Vegas, I expect the same thing I get out of a Kansas race, and I enjoy Kansas races. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I go to them. I wouldn't go to them every year if I hated it. I'm not that much of a masochist, but I was expecting a little more, and it does fit, I should say, into a couple of the last few intermediate next gen races, there have been a lot, and next gen races in general, they have been getting a little more dominated. I think that might have been part of it. You know, there wasn't that much racing up front, and Imperial Fox doesn't show much outside the top five unless they're doing a sponsor segment to cut off Danica. I just want to say this, going off again on another tangent, I feel bad for Danica. Because
she
would bring up so many points, and then Clint would be like, I don't really think so. And it's like, Clint, stop. Like,
she did get a couple things wrong. My favorite bit was early on. She's like, the outside on these restarts looks dominant. And then as she was saying that, like, I think Chastain was just making a pass on the bottom.
So I don't say she was perfect, but if it really felt
she was trying. When Mike Joy had to cut her off for that, I don't remember what it was, Coca-Cola family of drivers, it was the Toyota Aero segment with Larry McReynolds. I love Larry Mac, but why did we come back from a commercial only to show like a 90-second full screen basically sponsorship when Danica's trying to tell us about Tyler Reddick carving through the field?
Because it's Fox Sports.
Basically, on the week of International Women's Day, which, by the way, tell a woman in your life that you think of today on International Women's Day.
Yeah.
On the week of that, we bring in Danica Patrick to get mansplained by a Clint Boyer, basically.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't, Danny.
We're checking off every box.
We're checking off every box. Yeah, the freaking. Oh my god, I did not expect to hear you say that, Danny. That's
what I'm saying. I mean, basically, that's what it sounds like when you say it like that.
Oh my gosh. Clint Boyer, though, I don't know. It's just I can't get around to him in the booth. I don't know if it's, you know, one of those generational things, but no, because I like Mike Joy, like, you know, still, and he's like way older than me, but I don't know. I can't wait for Kevin Harvick to get in the booth next season. You know, I know we're already three races in, still have a ways to go, but I don't know. It's like being a dead horse, I feel like, you know, so yeah. It's just not really going to get any better. And I feel like the next time we should comment on it is
when it gets really worse.
Yeah. If it gets like really, really worse or really, really better, you know,
I know it's the same thing over and over again, but I kind of argued this after the race on Sunday. I was like, bring up still problems you have with it, because if you say nothing, they can just
different problems. No, yeah.
I'm not saying go after people on Twitter. Honestly, I'm just avoid Twitter. but at the same time, if there's something that you're not crazy about, still say it. Just don't, you know, like us talk about it for 20 minutes before, like we did before the show. But there was one other thing I wanted to ask you guys. I personally thought it was, but do you guys think the Eric Almirola caution at the end warranted NASCAR throwing a caution? I think so, because he was sideways in front of the field, but I noticed a lot of people didn't.
So, all right, he was sideways. Yes, you're right. It did warrant a caution. It was just crazy to me. I feel like NASCAR, they were looking, though, because that was quick. That was really, really, really quick, though. Like, I mean, like, he had just gotten sideways, and oh there it is, caution, immediately, you know, so... Yeah,
it makes
you
question when they don't see other things.
Yeah, you know,
you have eyes. We know you see everything.
Yeah, so
because
Jared,
of things like this.
Jared, I fully agree. That did need to be a caution, but it was just suspicious there. I was like, whoa, that was pretty fast. That was really fast.
Oh, it was. I will say it was fast. We talked last year and the year before on this show so much about NASCAR not throwing a caution at the right time. I feel like it's hypocritical that, you know, when a car is actually sideways in front of the field, they should have left it green. Who cares? You know, there's smoke coming off it.
And, I think they should have probably thrown a caution for the last lap wreck too. I know it happened towards the back,
but it was when they came around. Yeah.
I'm with Jared on this one. I remember many truck races. There was one at Charlotte where there clearly should have been a caution thrown early. I was at the Bristol 2021 race and watch this truck be slow on top forever until Kyle Larson finally hit it. They didn't throw a caution. Yeah, I'd rather them be throwing it too early than not throw it at all.
Yeah, and really quick, Danny, if you want to put a really quick poll, just like asking the chat, yeah, like what did they think of that?
Yeah, we need to go ahead and get rid of that.
Oh, I won! Oh, I won! I won the hottest take! Oh my god!
What was the percentage?
A while ago.
34%, Eric Estep 30%, Jarrett 20%, Danny B 14%. Whoa.
This is the first one I haven't won.
Yeah, I think so.
Gotta get
so,
spicy.
So, I mean, that, I'm noticing I'm always like the ones at least. That means they really agree with what I say.
It's hard not to agree with Alex Bowman did well.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to be a freaking Alex Bowman, like a really bad Alex Bowman hater.
All right.
But think, yeah, that's a hot take.
All right. So what poll should we say, Darian? I'm sorry.
So just ask them like if the Eric Amarillo poll should have been a caution or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because so I'll tell you yes what, no. when I streamed after the race, I had like a bunch of people in my chat were like, Larson got robbed. Or, you know, like they're trying to rob Hendrick. And I'm like,
whoa. Larson fans in the last year or so, I've noticed have gotten very loud.
Hold on, Jared. They're trying to rob Hendrick. Meanwhile, they're 1-2-3. How are you going to rob three cars? Like one's bound to win. They were that dumb.
Yeah, you don't know. Truex could have held the lead if things happened.
Keselowski could have taken zero tires and made things more interesting up front.
But... yeah, more cars could have made it more interesting, except Truex, just him. But
okay. My verbiage for this is kind of weird. It just should Eric Almirola have been a caution? Just should he be a caution? Should he be a caution for insisting on the track? Caution.
Yeah.
Our chat would say yes in a heartbeat. They are not. They do not seem to be Almirola.
He's on the track. Caution.
But speaking of it, I mean, they seem to generally agree. I think, yeah, like they understand. Like, yeah, he was sideways. It was just, it was just really quick though. It was really quick. They were like, they were just looking. They were just looking for a reason. Like, where's that? You know.
So. That's going to get taken out of context. Oh, man. What do we got next? We need to move on from
Well, and on the subject of eyes, we need to talk about ratings.
No, do we have to? No.
What does eyes and ratings have to do with them?
Because you have eyes on the TV screen, Eric.
You're right. I was trying to figure out the segue. Right. Danny's usually the master of segues. This one was too smart.
I'm still on it.
I can roll in here. So 3.991 million viewers watched this race, which is 12% off of last year's. I will say, just to start with, I think part of it was the Chase Elliott effect, but I still don't think that we would have seen an increase of ratings this week, personally. Yeah. I don't think it'd be as bad, though.
This is where Jarrett comes in with a but.
Yeah.
But.
That was a good impression.
But we also only had 813,000 in the key demo, which was 20%. Worth noting, both IndyCar and Formula One were down from last year. And that's why I say if the hottest sport in America, which make no mistake, right now, growth-wise, Formula One is – if they're having a decrease in ratings in a similar field as you, I really don't see why NASCAR would without their most popular driver. I still think, though, it would have been a 6-8% decrease around what we've seen so far this season. But, I mean, I think that the Chase Elliott effect still is pretty big in that regard, too. You've seen it before. You've seen it with Dale Jr., Jeff Gordon, you know, so.
Yeah, a really quick segue, though, this still has to do with the ratings, just IndyCar-wise. It's just funny to me. I feel like IndyCar had the biggest W despite losing viewership because...
Did the best race.
Not only that, but also a lot of people didn't even know they were back this weekend. I'm serious. They found out the day of. There was quite a few.
How was that a
found W? Out the day of. Well, I don't know, because...
Seems like an L in marketing department.
Well, no, you would expect... the rating to be a lot lower though because of that. So their marketing department still has to have, you know, they have a lot of work to do still though.
My argument is kind of like with NASCAR is their core base is there. And I think NASCAR's core base is growing. We saw it with the increases this week with Xfinity and trucks. But
once again, they've increased almost every race this year so far.
But sizable amounts too. It's just with me, like, you know, you talked about the IndyCar one. Like, what's the point? You know, yeah, you had a great race, but we saw it, and that's kind of what NASCAR. Yeah. It's like, you know, we can try and manipulate it to say it's good. And again, I still think it would have been better had Chase Elliott been there. I don't think that's a hot take to say that you need your most popular person in your respective sport. Like, would anyone watch a Chiefs game if Pat Mahomes wasn't playing?
Growing up, nobody was a Chiefs fan. Growing up, so no.
And I just got to say this. I know no one was really worried about this, but the only really competition that NASCAR has right now is XFL and USFL, and I'm just looking at their numbers. Yeah, they're no threat anytime soon. Three XFL games averaged 571,000 views.
Go St. Louis. Go Battle Hawks.
Houston Roughnecks, I think, are still undefeated.
Yeah. Go Battle Hawks.
You guys know the team names?
Yes.
Just because it's the only reasonable football team in Southeast Texas.
Houston is my team because their logo resembles the Oilers, and that's, you know, the Titans' history.
Oh,
boy. But yeah, XFL is not going to be any threat to NASCAR's ratings.
But unfortunately, though, the ratings in general, it was an L for everybody. Everybody was down. So
I think the NASCAR one can be at least partially explained because of Chase Elliott not racing. But it's the IndyCar one. It's like, how did they butcher the marketing so bad that they had a 15%, 16% decrease?
Yeah.
And F1, a new season of Drive to Survive came out like a week ago. How did they go down?
See, that's to my earlier point. It's like with IndyCar's, you know, marketing mishaps, like, I was expecting a way lower number than just 15-16%.
And remember, too, you know, I believe IndyCar had less viewers in Formula One, and IndyCar was on main NBC.
Yeah, that's a major problem. It's a major problem still.
And the F1 race was at like 10 a.m. Central, I think?
No, 9 a.m. Central.
I'm used to a lot of them being 7 or 8 a.m.
It was like an hour and a half before the IndyCar race. So, I mean, I have to give credit. This is probably by NBC's doing moving the IndyCar race around. Like, the way they had it all set up is you could watch pretty much all three races right in a row.
It felt like Memorial Day weekend. It was nice.
I did see somebody bring up, I saw some people bring up, on the monstrosity of Twitter that I hate Twitter. It was pre-purchased too. I just want to say that for anyone trying to make anything out of this.
Hey, Jared, you're gonna join Twitter Blue, Jared? You're about to pay $8.
Oh, I'm gonna go get a couple Chipotle melts for the $8. But I saw a good point on that crap site, and it was that maybe, especially for core motorsports viewers like us who will watch multiple races, I mean, are you really wanting to sit in front of your TV from like 9:30 in the morning all the way to 6 at night on what was a pretty, at least for me, I could tell outside, was a pretty pleasant Sunday afternoon. Like, and I'm not trying to make it as an excuse. I'm just saying maybe it explains why we saw that kind of, you know, overall motorsports decrease. Because I understand NASCAR, the start of this year, would have been down, especially with Elliott being out. I can understand IndyCar being down just because obviously their marketing wasn't that damn good, if even IndyCar fans really didn't know it was coming back. But Formula One being down is what really sets like not an alarm bell, but just a light off. Like there is something more going on, and maybe it's TV. Maybe it also is just less people watching TV. I get that. But I feel like it was almost a hodgepodge of different problems all thrown into one little bowl.
Jeez, I just looked at the IndyCar schedule. They started this week and they don't race again until April 2nd.
Yep, that's part of the problem. Yep, we had an awesome season opener, but you won't see another race for almost a month.
You got to do some guessing as to when they're racing.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, they have a lot of problems, though. They have a lot of problems, unfortunately. But anyways, yeah.
And to end the poll, people think that Eric Almirola should be a caution.
Oh, did someone say poll? And it's time for the famous iceberg poll. The famous iceberg poll on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Sorry.
Answer us now, poll.
Paul. I will answer you. My YouTube app actually completely restarted and then popped back up, so I had to pull the poll back
figure.
YouTube. But luckily, that's only just for the comments, because I have everything else written down. So 10% of you thought that this race was a great race. So, you know what, guys? We do know at least 10% of our fans are Hendrick Motorsports fans. I'm kidding. 46% said it was a good race, so a net positive of 56%. 32% said it was just a plain average race. 9% said below average. 4% bad. So 13% net negative on this one. We have a familiar first commenter, MVR owner. So is it a positive, a negative, or a meme?
Meme.
I'm going to say positive.
Positive.
Okay. Here's what he had. He said, I love how post-race Danica and Clint were talking about how, quote, his career began on a computer and that computers and sims are the future. Side note, did anyone else realize this race actually ended under caution? Clint Bowyer said something about it in post-race as well.
I clearly didn't realize. I thought it ended under green.
I didn't realize that.
I knew a wreck cap. I don't think they threw the caution. I didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
They must have waited a while.
Yeah.
It was when they were like coming to the line, I think. So like once the race was decided.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
fair enough.
Once it was 1, 2, 3, according to the conspiracy theorists.
So we got a meme and a lesson. There you go. I didn't know that.
Should we make lesson the fourth option?
Educate us.
Teach us a lesson, guys.
I like that one. Dan, you need to do that at some point. Like, educate us. Pull. And just do something about us.
Side note, I just want to say we have Mittens Racing Cat in the chat again.
Aw.
What life are you on now, Mittens? 6, 7?
Hey, did y'all see there's a whole video that was uploaded basically doing a whole investigation on who hit the cat? Yeah, seriously.
Did they figure out who did it?
So it was between Ty Gibbs and Eric Almirola.
Oh.
Another reason for the chat not to like Almirola.
Side note, I have waited to say this to you, Darian, but that video you posted about the fan who watched I cannot. I had to click like don't show this because that picture you used in the thumbnail of the dead person just freaked me out.
Hey,
so
that's
much.
A mask. That's a mask, bro. It's a Halloween mask.
That's it's a mask. Mask. Yes, it's a mask.
I just freaking edited it like crazy, bro.
I saw that. I was like, wow, what a picture, Darian.
Hey, but bro, the 2011-2012 seasons, bro, they're ruined for everybody.
Darian, I don't know if you saw my comments on that video or not.
I hearted it. I hearted it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't go back and check my comments usually because...
I know the story behind that. I just like, I saw the picture. I was like, I get it away. Get it away.
I'm laughing at this comment on your video, Darian. I know we're getting really meta here, but it said that just brought the term diehard fan to my definition.
Okay,
let's get back to the poll, bro.
Yeah, sorry.
So after the show, go watch Darian's video.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. In a morbid way. So looking at some comments from the poll and of the race, I'll read a couple. The top comment was from Sans Geek, who said the first 200 or so laps was a snooze fest, but the last half of stage 3 was entertaining and had some great racing. Love seeing Byron with the clutch out win. He deserves it. So
just be consistent. Just be consistent.
Let's see what else we have. I'm not reading books, people. I do that in my spare time.
Hold on. Can I just read something real quick?
Of course.
To answer Eric's earlier question, Mittens the Racing Cat said Mittens has 5 lives left, and I love Ty Gibbs until he took my 6th life.
Also,
hey, he gets us. He's just trying to show him Jesus right up in person.
Here comes Jesus.
I broke you.
That's funny. That's a good that's a hell of a sponsor like, activation.
You know those billboards, get ready to meet God. that's Ty's next
we
game.
Broke Darian.
That's funny.
Oh man.
Oh, that was funny.
I'm sorry. I need to get my closer to the egg, bro.
And we're just talking about how Mittens.
Bro, let's get back to the poll, man.
I'm a Christian. I'm allowed to laugh at that.
Let's get back to the poll, bro. Darren, I can't do this.
We're just talking about how Mittens met the subject of your video yesterday.
CJ
Odell says, Trackhouse has had 5 top 10s and 6 starts. Suarez finished in the top 10 for the 3rd week in a row. Chastain just narrowly missed out on a 3rd top 10 in a row by finishing 12th. Also, shout out to Wallace for a top 5. Cindric and Haley also for top 10s. Yeah, Austin Cindric. Yeah. I was like a no-show all race and then just goes full Matt Kenseth and pops up in 6th at the end. I'm going to get all your guys' favorite drivers mentioned at some point. I got 2 down, 1 to go. Let's see. Blake says 7 out of 10 race overall. Thought the booth was better too. Danica getting interrupted for a planned segment was funny.
Yeah. She's just doing her job. And Mike's like, excuse me. Give me now.
Skip.
Eric. Where'd you go?
Eric.
He'll come back.
He's just laughing at the Ty Gibbs thing.
Yeah.
Mr. Matias for this comment says, had some exciting moments here and there, but overall, I thought it was decent. I don't think it ever went as far down as average. Always happy to see my boy Willie B score a win. I'd say it's a fair, especially like for your guy winning a race. I'm telling you, when Dale Jr. would win a race, all right, there I go. I got all of them. When Dale Jr. would win a race, I would just straight up be like, it was the greatest race ever. It was amazing. And people are like, that race really sucks.
That sucked,
like, no, it was
bro.
Awesome. Junior won.
The 2004 Fall Phoenix race was the greatest Phoenix race ever.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, great. Perfect.
Wins by three seconds.
This is one of my favorite accounts because they just post the same comment every week and it never gets old for me because it's just the joke is good.
I think I know what it is.
NASCAR Shill said, thank you, Steve Phelps, Steve O'Donnell, and Ben Kennedy. What a great race. He just says it every week. It's just a positive thing to them.
What a gimmick to be doing.
I have a guy who comments on every one of my posts, shorts, and videos saying Marty Robbins. That's it.
Yeah. We got that
At
least you know what to expect.
Yeah.
let me get down to the bottom. We can get the spicy one.
Down to the gutters. I love going to
This is where the Hendrick haters are.
Yep.
For the Elliott fans. Wow. I'm surprised. There's no cussing. I can read this.
Oh.
So I'll read the last five since they're actually able to be read. Ill says, what a terrible broadcast by Fox and a terrible funeral procession on track. Damn,
y'all.
Andre says, the most boring race I've seen in years. What the hell was that flag in the end? The guy maintained his car. He never spun out.
Guys, I can name like 5-10 more boring races than that one.
A bunch of numbers to spell out Ghost Killer says, not a real win.
Wait, what?
Okay.
That was as real as it ever looked to me.
He's trolling, bro. Don't fall for that.
Black Hat 992 says, wow, that was boring. And Logan England simply leaves mid. Now, I want to say none of those positive or negative statements were mine. They were all other commenters. So if you take this out of context, I will put this context underneath where
hey,
that
nine. What's up? What's up, Noah Lewis? Hey, Danny, if we want to mod Noah Lewis.
I just made him a mod.
Yeah, what's up, Noah?
If I see Peter again, I'll mod him if I don't have it already.
Oh, I thought you already had him modded. Well, I could
be wrong. Maybe I do, but Noah is too.
Yeah, I saw Peter in here too. What's up, guys? What's up? How's it going? We'll see y'all at Atlanta this weekend.
But that was the poll. And
next weekend.
That's what everyone thought.
Yes. And that'll conclude this edition of the famous Iceberg Poll on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast.
Get some water. I was choking after the
had to refresh
to Jesus.
But you know, we were having fun on the show, but now I think it's about that time we get into the serious, you know, stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Hendrick Motorsports goes 1-2-3. Probably could have been 1-2-3-4 if Chase Elliott was racing. I guess we can kind of cover that a bit. I mean, Josh Berry filling in finished 29th, but we know now at this point Chase Elliott is going to miss at least the next 6 weeks with the leg injury. He fractured his left tibia in a snowboarding wreck.
Not the fibia, the tibia.
I get them mixed up all the time. So Josh Berry filling in. We know Josh Berry is going to fill in at all the oval tracks until Elliott comes back. And Jordan Taylor, I'm excited about this. Jordan Taylor is going to drive the 9 at COTA. I'm going to be there. And I mentioned this in my show today. I feel like we still occasionally see a road course ringer like Kimi Raikkonen last year, and I guess this year again as well. But like, it's rare these days that a ringer comes in and just like runs up front, you know, like they might crack the top 10 if they're lucky. But I think Jordan Taylor, he's going to be a top 5 threat, no doubt.
He's going to bring back the road course ringer in NASCAR.
He very well might. So that's exciting.
So I'm looking at the races that would have Barry in. His last one, well, hopefully last one, would be Martinsville. Don't count him out for that one.
Yeah.
He gets Richmond and Phoenix this weekend as well. So
Hey,
that works to his favor.
You know, Josh Berry, though, perfect replacement. You know, I know, you know, the dream scenario would have been Jimmy Johnson returns to Hendrick Motorsports. But no, Josh Berry, he's a very capable replacement.
I'm not going to lie to you. I would have loved maybe like a Martinsville to have seen Dale Jr. run one race in a next gen.
Hey, and I'm buying liked that. All the Martinsville tickets in the world.
Hey, I would have liked that too. But hey, you know, you never know with this next gen and you know, yeah. Junior and the prom. So of course,
The Corey LaJoy. I would love to talk to Corey and see if there was any truth to the rumors that he was in discussion, or that he was going to drive the nine.
I was thinking about that being similar to David Reagan when he stepped in for Kyle Busch, because I think he was with Front Row at the beginning of the year.
That sounds right.
He was with Front Row, I think.
But also,
was he with Front Row or was he with Michael Waltrip Racing with the Toyotas when it came with for Kyle Busch?
I thought he got hired by Michael Waltrip after doing so well in the 18.
Might have been that. Yeah. Because that year, all I remember Michael Waltrip Racing for was Brett Moffitt being down a cylinder and restarting in front of the whole field at Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
No, that was my bad, Jared. I'm sorry. I don't want to mess up your mic or anything. My bad. But anyways, also though, Corey LaJoy, he had talked about this publicly. I believe it was a couple years back. He actually wrote a letter to Rick Hendricks saying like, "Hey, I want to drive for you and stuff." So like, I'm like, okay, well, he's doing way better now. But then also, I like that. Well, he's doing way better now. But then also too, like, hey, you know, an opportunity just popped up out of nowhere, you know, not the way you want it per se, but still, you know, like it was looking like a slight possibility though. It's just that, you know,
I just wonder if it was true. Like, I want to know if it was actually true. And I feel like Corey would be the kind of guy to be honest and say, yeah, it was, or it wasn't, because I saw a couple reporters were saying like, hey, there's two choices that are being mulled over. One would be surprising. And then you had all the Corey LaJoy rumors. And I'm like, that, I feel like there might have been some truth to it. But like you said, Darian, he's actually gotten off to a hot start this year with Spire, three straight top 20s. By their standards, that's it's a really good start to the season. So it would have been great for him personally to go to the nine, maybe contend for a win over the next few weeks. But I would hate to mess up the momentum that they seem to be building long-term over at Spire. Like if they brought in Hosovar or somebody to drive the seven, I don't think they would get better.
And shout out to Carson Osovar really quick, bro. You know what you was doing, bro. You was trolling, bro. Like, come on, bro. Chill out.
Yeah, no, he knew what he was doing.
Do it, bro.
He had a chance to, you know, tie into what he personally had going on.
He said the same
thing as Noah in the pen.
Bro, he was saying like
77 car in the Xfinity series starting at Dover.
But his explanation was like, oh, I meant to put 7 p.m. Please, it's not that hard to put p.m., bro. Like, I love Carson, bro. He's funny. But anyway, to Hendrick, though, back to Chase. I guess I can start off with, like, you know, giving my thoughts on it. You know, it is very unfortunate. Obviously, you know, I feel like our generation is blessed in a sense, because we didn't grow up watching drivers, you know, die on the racetrack, you know. But whenever they get hurt, though, in and out of the car, it still sucks, because, I mean, you want to see, you know, the most talented guys out there. And Chase Elliott, I mean, I know some of y'all like to troll him and stuff, and, you know, I did to a certain extent, like, oh, Mickey champion, oh, but no, let's get serious here, y'all. Like, you know, he's already a champion. Every season in the Cup Series, he has finished at least top 10 in points. So it's just... it's very unfortunate that this happened, you know, when he was just, you know, having fun, just, you know, snowboarding and stuff. And my concern is, though, is that, you know, a lot of us, you know, a lot of fans have they've been saying like, oh yeah, you know, Kyle Busch comeback about to happen. Whoa. Now we don't even know, like, officially how long he's going to be out. Right now it says 6 weeks. But that could turn into 8 weeks, 10 weeks, depending on, you know, a bunch of stuff can happen. A bunch of stuff can pop up with his recovery and stuff like that.
And I've been talking about this with these guys here. One thing I'm curious about, if, you know, Darian does the Darian's betting odds, if you're a betting person, well, I think before this happened, Elliott's odds winning the championship were +700. They've now went to +950 after 1 week out. Keep an eye on this. See where he's looking at in 6 weeks. And if you think he can pull off a Kyle Busch, could be a good opportunity. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
for me with Elliott, I feel like I have a unique perspective on this, because I didn't do it snowboarding, but I broke my leg before. I broke my leg, foot, ankle, all this stuff at the same time. And the recovery for me actually is really quick, because I did everything the doctor told me to. We followed up on every, you know, appointment, everything like that. For me, though, the worst part was trying to rush it back. And there were only two times I tried rushing anything. And it both had to do with getting the cast off and going to the boot. And when I got the walking boot put on the first time, it was too early, so I didn't have enough support on the broken bone yet. More painful than the actual. Like, I would not wish that pain on anyone. Like, the actual, like, I brought this up the other day. Like, when I broke it, it hurt, obviously. It hurt. But it wasn't, you know, for me, it wasn't, like, the worst pain I've ever felt. You know, I obviously couldn't walk on it, but I wasn't, like, bawling. I wasn't making, as much a scene as I couldn't, you know, it could have. I wasn't meaning to not be able to get up. But when I got the cast taken off and the boot put on, I like was uncontrollably crying. I was in the most pain I've ever been in. I was begging basically like some kind of change, whether it was, you know, to up the pain meds for it so it would go away, get the cast back on, whatever it had to be. And so where I tie this in on is for Elliot's case, you know, this season, yes, 6 weeks. And if that's the case, then awesome. Because I think NASCAR needs Chase Elliott back. But long term has to be the thought process here. If he gets hurt again and like really screws up that leg, then we might not be looking at 6 weeks. We might be looking at an entire season lost or it going into the next year, because that stuff that can, those aches, those pains that can carry over. So that's that for me is where, and it's the same thing with Kyle Busch in 2015 is where I'm thinking on this is I don't want him to rush his way back and then get more hurt than before.
Yeah. You'd hope that he definitely has the best team of doctors around and you'd hope he's driven to follow their guidance to a T. So exactly. I don't want him to rush it back. Everyone wants him back. The team, the sponsor, everybody wants him back as soon as possible.
The sport.
Yeah. Wants him back. But don't rush it back. NASCAR has basically already said you're going to get a waiver. So, I mean, like, honestly, push it an extra couple weeks. I know you want to come back. It sounds like maybe Talladega. I would wait a week. Don't come back for Talladega.
Whatever's after. Right at the back and then have someone jump in like Denny Hamlin did.
Yeah, you could do exactly. That's actually not a bad idea. You could do that. Because ultimately, with no top 30 in points rule, you just have to win a race. And if he comes back with 10, 15, maybe close to 20 regular season races left, yeah, Chase Elliott can win one of those. I think everyone would. I think all of us here, everyone watching, would pick Chase Elliott to win one of the final regular season races. He's fucking just that fun. Good. But if he's not 100%, if he comes back and he's not 100%, then I don't know. Maybe Chase Elliott's not in condition to contend for wins. So you want to make sure this is healed completely. I think he will.
I saw someone say, you know, the big difference between this and Kyle Busch's is that Kyle Busch didn't have to worry about stages taking away extra points that, you know, they have today, but also also the Chase Elliott's advantage. He doesn't have to be in the top 30 like Kyle Busch had to be. The biggest thing, you know, one would assume, I mean, it's Chase Elliott. He's going to get the waiver. Tony Stewart got a waiver in 2016 after his, what was it, UTV, whatever the term is. He had a crash and something like that in the offseason. He got a waiver for that. One would assume, but the question is also there, you know, do you think he should get a waiver? I mean, you know, this was an extracurricular activity that in all terms of arguing was avoidable in a way. But, you know, not going to say, you know, oh, shame on you, Chase. But, you know, there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah, it's a fair. Yeah, it's fair point. It's a fair point.
I'll make the argument and I guarantee people will disagree with me on it, but I don't honestly like the whole waiver deal no matter what, because it hasn't been yet. It'd take a lot of circumstances to do so, but this can be exploited. I don't like it also because of the top 30 rule. Now there is, you know, he can win a race that is challenging, and that's not what I'm talking about in what I'm saying here, but it is not as much of a challenge to luck into a rain win or have a good strategy call than to get in the top 30 in points and make up that time when we now have a much more competitive field than we even did back in 2015. And it's one of the things I think we overlooked when we talked about when the top 30 rule got taken away, is that it's almost like NASCAR is making it as simple the most simple paths possible to make these the postseason, to let anyone in no matter what happens. And then if you even look at NASCAR's precedent, you know, they, you know, allowing Tony Stewart in, I remember that was controversial at the time because when they let Kyle Busch in, they said it was during a racing incident. So I just want some like consistency here. Like, is just everything waiver worthy? Because I personally think that everything isn't. If you do something extracurricular and get hurt, that's on you. You made that decision. Just like Denny Hamlin did in 2010, just like Tony Stewart did in 2016.
If the president was set with Tony Stewart in 2016, I think that's where it needs to stay. The only thing I could think of in more recent time was Brett Moffitt being hurt in a motocross accident, but he never needed a waiver because the COVID pandemic actually kept the sport out long enough for him to fully heal from that to where he didn't even need the waiver.
I
agree with Jared. I think the precedent ultimately says that, yeah, he should and will get a waiver. But I honestly do agree. Like, I think there needs to in the future. Maybe not. Maybe the line has already been set. If you get injured at all, you're going to get a waiver. But, you know, personally, I think Tony Stewart getting a waiver in 2016 was a little silly. And I honestly think Chase Elliott getting a waiver this year is a little silly as well. I don't know. I think it's consistent with past decisions, but I think past decisions were done a little too willy-nilly. I can't remember who tweeted it. I want to say it was Aaron Bearden. I don't remember who I saw tweet it, but it was Seth Eggert from Kicking the Tires, I believe, who tweeted out a chart of every waiver in NASCAR history. And I think it was Aaron who made a comment that the only driver who's never ever been declined a waiver was Grant Enfinger because he missed a race because he didn't have sponsorship. And so it was basically the comment was, I guess you get a waiver for everything except being poor. And I thought, damn, that is accurate.
If you're below the poverty line, no, like, waiver.
Even Matt Kenseth got a freaking waiver in 2020 for not having a ride for 4 weeks.
Isn't it like the rule you need to declare to run the full schedule? It's like, he never declared. He's a sub.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I guess he was technically, he was like, I'm declaring for the cup, I guess.
I guess it would seem bad on NASCAR's part too. Yeah, we're not going to let the guy subbing in for the guy who just dropped the N-word during a pandemic.
I think they did it. I think it was mainly a favor to Ganassi. They're like, hey, we suspended your driver, so we'll let your new driver be playoff eligible. I think that's what it ultimately was.
That's a fair.
But at the same time, that was only... Larson only did, what, 4 races? I mean, at that point, he was basically doing the whole season.
It was. I mean, I get it, but it's to Jared's point, they give a waiver for almost everything. So, at this point, the precedent
It ended up not mattering. He wasn't going to make the playoffs, sadly, but...
The lesson to learn in all of this is don't be poor.
just have a sponsor and everything will work out.
Have millions, then, have, yeah, have gosh. Hundreds of thousands of dollars behind you at all times. Yeah.
Just be rich, gosh.
You're telling me Grant Enfinger couldn't find $50,000 for that race?
What a joke, man. I just find that on the street every day.
Yeah, my gosh.
I have one final question for everybody here. So, like, with Hendrick Motorsports being so dominant early on, where do you see Chase Elliott falling with the team? Do you think it'll be business as usual when he comes back, or is there going to be like some time where it's like, oh, he has to get readjusted and all that?
But I think if he's coming back in 6 weeks by the Coke 600, I expect him to be completely normal. I expect kind of like Kyle Busch. You'll be a little rusty going in, but you'll race pretty much like normal, if not better, being more motivated.
Because looking back on history, it's like when certain drivers who have gotten hurt have come back, like you either have a Kyle Busch 2015 type season championship or Denny Hamlin 2013. Now, granted, that was a massive accident, so, you know, way different injury. But, you know, I feel like, I don't know, like there's really no in between usually, you know, so I don't know. Hopefully he comes back and he's, you know, it's normal Chase Elliott and competes for a championship. That would be funny, though. That would be funny. And thank you, Mods.
Yeah, if Chase wins a title this year, both of his championships will be Mickey Mouse championships.
No!
What
have you done?
I wonder if people hating on Kyle Busch for that will keep the same energy for Chase Elliott doing that.
Oh, that's a good point.
We're going to make sure they keep the same energy.
Remember, Jared, Kyle Busch is now a fan favorite. He's never done anything wrong in the eyes of apparently the entire fan base.
He was with the Toyota back then, though.
Yeah, Toyota corrupted him for all these years. He's been healed.
Eric, you just gave. Oh, you messed up, bro.
That's not me saying it. I'm just predicting what the Twitter.
I wasn't even thinking about that though. Instagram trolls. Now it's out there. Now it's out there in front of.
I just gave you a video
people.
Idea.
One other question from now. I have for you guys. One other question I got is: should teams restrict drivers from doing more extracurricular activities like this? Because I'll just put this out there. Set Hendrick back with their sponsors probably a little bit. Sponsors probably aren't happy about their driver not being there, and it's not good for the sport missing the most popular driver.
I was just thinking about that, and you know, I was worried because as soon as I heard about the news, like obviously, like you know, after thinking about like, damn, like hope Jace is okay, you know, this and that. Like I was also thinking, I was like, ooh, this could have a very negative effect because this isn't just a driver; it's the most popular driver in the sport.
And just to clarify that, what Darren said, I think all four of us, our first thought was, dang, hope Chase is okay.
Yes.
Then about an hour later, that's when you start thinking, oh, what is this going to actually do?
Yeah, no, guys, it wasn't like 2 minutes after finding out. Like, no, it was like way, yeah, like during the truck.
But that's when all the questions are coming, like, okay, should he get a waiver, you know?
Yeah,
all that
exactly.
Stuff.
So, I don't know, like, I was thinking about that, but then the response from Hendrick Motorsports told me that, yeah, they're pretty PO'd, but at the same time, it's like, you know, these drivers, they spend, you know, a ton of time getting, you know, prep for the week and stuff. You know, they have a long season and stuff. They obviously have to have some type of personal life. Otherwise, you will burn out. And really, I mean, that's really for anything you do work-wise in general. You know, you mm-hmm. don't want to, you know, burn the oil and stuff. But I don't know, as far as like, you know, owners restricting drivers to do certain things. I mean, we've seen that to some extent with Joe Gibbs and, you know, like some of the dirt racing stuff we've seen to an extent. But I mean, since this is the most popular driver, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to fully restrict them, but maybe like for certain trips or certain things, like, I don't know, like maybe the drivers have to start letting them know, like, hey, like, is it cool if I do this and
so,
that all the time? So I'm not
I
sure.
I don't think you'll see any widespread changes. But I'm also not surprised to hear the drivers say, no, let us do whatever we want. Like, of course, that's what they're going to say. And I don't blame them. So this is what I said on my show today. If I was Chase Elliott, I would not go snowboarding. I would also not be a pilot and fly my own planes around. But that's also because I don't take that many risks in my day-to-day life. And I think to be a great race car driver, you like that same itch, that same part of your brain that makes you a great race car driver also causes you to be more risk-taking, more of a daredevil, more of a thrill seeker. And so I feel like you can't have Chase Elliott be the best driver he can be without also indulging his off-track escapades. I mean, look at Larson. I know he's racing a sprint car. He's actually racing, but Kyle Larson runs every dirt race he wants, wins 10 cup races. Like, I think it made him a better Cup Series driver. So that's why, like, when Joe Gibbs, we found out, has apparently told Christopher Bell no more sprint car racing, I kind of want Gibbs to change his mind, because I do get that sprint car racing is probably more dangerous than snowboarding, but I think it'll make Bell better. I think it's a worthwhile risk. So if you want Chase Elliott to be his very best, my point is I think you have to let him scratch that itch. I just think that's why we always say race car drivers are a different breed. I think that's what we're talking about. So I would not go snowboarding, but that's also why I'm not a race car driver, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So I kind of set up this, you know, because we a little bit earlier when I asked, you know, about how many people would watch a Kansas City Chiefs game if Patrick Mahomes wasn't in the game. And I think we can say Pat Mahomes is the face of the NFL. Probably the face of professional sports right now.
Let's not talk about his little brother.
Don't even bring it up then. Chase Elliott is the face of NASCAR. And I bring those two up for the sense that there was a video that Pat Mahomes put on a couple years ago on his Instagram, just him going playing basketball with some friends. He got called by the Kansas City Chiefs and told, you are not allowed to do any kind of sport outside of football that is like would not help in football in any way. Like, don't do that. We don't want you injured. You only have a finite amount of time to be the best in the world at what you do. And I think the same can apply to Chase Elliott on this and to anyone. Do I think it should be different because they're race car drivers in a sense? Yes. I think, you know, going over and doing other series, doing a late model series, doing, you know, World of Outlaws, going over to IndyCar maybe as like a one-off here and there. I think that stuff can be a given on that. But look at Denny Hamlin, tore his ACL playing basketball. Chase Elliott broke a leg playing or being on a snowboard. I think that stuff is in a different bin than extra racing, because just I think that they're just completely different things in that regard. I think it should stay up to the teams. If, you know, as much as it sucks that Christopher Bell can't race, and I disagree with that, I think that that's Joe Gibbs' prerogative. He's the one who put the money and put the time and the effort and all that stuff to propping him up. Same with Rick Hendrick. But I do think it's something I think teams should look more into, because this will hurt the sport. Like, this will hurt everyone. And it's, I know it sucks because Chase Elliott would have to be held to a different standard, but I think we've seen throughout racing history, whether it's Richard Petty, Bill Elliott, Dale Jr., or Chase Elliott now, most popular driver maybe unfairly has to be held up to a different standard because of their popularity and because of what they matter to the sport itself. And it sucks because they can't have their personal lives as much, but this is what they signed up for with their job, and they did get that popularity with this job. So I think there's more to it than just the driver's personal time being spent the way they want. They have an off season that is allotted time off of work to do this that is not during the season, and it is prime snowboarding season too.
I get that side of the argument for sure. Like, I think the team owners would absolutely be justified if they started restricting what drivers can do. I mean, like you're kind of talking about, like, LeBron James, I guarantee you, has a no snowboarding clause in his contract or something similar.
Yeah.
So, you know, why can't we hold drivers to the same standards other athletes are held to? That's totally reasonable. I think that's totally a reasonable take, but I do agree with the drivers when they say the season is a grind. And I still believe that. I think drivers are going to be daredevils. I think indulging that actually makes them better on Sundays. I there's an argument to be made there as well. And it's not a very scientific argument, but it's an argument that I think some drivers have proven in the past.
Truth is that really anything and everything could have a dangerous side to it. I mean, I'm not trying to say this in the same instance, but, you know, think about Kyle Busch. What happened to him in his vacation thing, depending on how that would have went down, that could have delayed his status of the season. Even, you know, if that had went any other direction with the Mexican government down there,
don't bring a firearm to another country. That might, I mean, what I'm saying is it's an avoidable risk. Like, it is a prime avoidable risk. Like,
I get where Jared's coming from, because also too, it's like, dude, you are, you know, one of the sport's, you know, main cash cows. Actually, you're the main cash cow, you know, to a certain extent.
Oh, I would love to see a breakdown from Lionel Racing and Fanatics of the merchandise numbers. I would love to see those numbers.
Seriously, like, this is sort of similar vibes when Dale Earnhardt Jr. had to leave for a while during the 2016 season. Like, the sport needs, like, you know, we need that most popular guy.
The race didn't feel the same without Chase Elliott there.
It. I'm sorry. It's just, I mean, it would be different if he wasn't, you know, a true championship contender. But that's a giant, you know, piece missing. You know what I mean? Like, we need him. We need Chase Elliott to race in NASCAR. We need him to compete for championships, you know? Like, so, yeah, it just didn't feel the same at all to me.
Well, I see people talking about there's risk and everything. I get that. But I think there's a risk between riding your bike or walking down the stairs, between that and snowboarding or bringing a gun to another country. Look, I think there's a different risk involved in both.
Okay. Talk about the other risk. Something that seems so simple. You know, I love to go fishing. I'm going to go on fishing this weekend. Recently here on this lake that, you know, the three of us live nearby, there was an accident where a guy didn't even expect this to happen. He was going down the lake, hit a log, the motor of his boat flung inside the boat and sadly hurt him pretty bad. That's something you never see coming. Something as simple as just going for a ride in your bass boat. And a lot of NASCAR drivers actually have those, by the way. Anything could be dangerous.
Yeah. I like this Need for Speed. Why not ride a bike down the stairs?
Hey, this is a good debate, though. I'm liking this. My point,
I think I don't want my point to say that Chase Elliott shouldn't be allowed to do that. My point is there should be more than just a black and white conversation on this. Because, like, when I think it was, like, I saw Mike Davis. His whole argument was driver's free time. And it's like, well, drivers also signed up to be race car drivers with $1 million sponsorships and tons of fans around the country. Like, I feel like when you make yourself a public figure, the whole private life during the season part kind of takes a back seat to your responsibilities as a driver. I mean, I think after wanting him to be all right, I think all four of our first responses were, why was he snowboarding the day before he had to practice for a race?
I'm not gonna lie, I did ask that.
That was
the exact same question.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, I'm not advocating for Chase Elliott to be put into a bubble like NBA.
Put him in a box.
Is that another Mickey Mouse reference?
Come here, bubble boy.
Oh God, no! I don't know that much about NBA. But that's not my point. Is I don't want Chase Elliott's life to be completely restricted. I wouldn't be saying the teams are out of line for making restrictions on what is essentially millions and millions of dollars of assets. I mean,
I know that. I think it's fair.
Does this? I don't see why. I don't see if NASCAR wants to be treated like every other sport. Why does NASCAR then? But we can't do it with this, and this. That is completely this. It could be completely used the same way as any other sport does.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, when's the podcast ski trip? When are we going?
Obviously, in the off season.
Friday before we go to a race.
Let's go.
Friday night before the Daytona 500. Let's do it. 2024.
Let's go to Aspen, Colorado. 2024, live from Aspen, Colorado, the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Hey,
how about this? We'll do it the night before a podcast, right before we have to fly to Daytona.
Let's do a podcast from the slopes.
I was about to say, we do that. Avalanche! Go! Avalanche!
We'll get one of those cameras that faces us the whole time, so you'll just see all four of our perspectives as we talk with headphones on.
Darian, instead of peeking the mic, would start an avalanche.
don't make me say that. We're going to...
Funny, can I give you a tangent real quick? This is because we're an hour and a half in, so this show is just going to be 4 hours long. We've already committed to that. But when I took a calculus class in high school, and I had a teacher who he would always tell us during the year, like, hey, do you guys want to take a break? And if we ever said yes, he would give us a quiz. Like, it was some sort of prank, you know? So we always knew when he asked, like, do you want a break? We're always like, no, we don't want a break. No. And one day he asked, do you guys want a break? We're all like, no. And he's like, no, for real. Like, let's do a break. And so we're like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, okay. And so he puts on a video of him at his ski trip he just came back from. It was like right after spring break or something. He's showing us this like POV GoPro video of him like falling down skiing. And it was really funny. It was really great. And we're watching this video. Everyone's like, yeah, this is the best break ever. In the video, he gets to the bottom of the slope. He turns the GoPro around to his face and says, all right, y'all, take your pencils out. It's time for a quiz. And I look down and he's already handing the quizzes out. Like I didn't.
Oh no, that's good.
That is funny.
No, that's good.
It was a memorable high school teacher student moment that I just skiing reminded me of it. I wanted to share.
Hey, we need more high school teachers like that in this country, man. That's cool, bro.
Yeah, made me want to go skiing though. Better than calculus.
Like, just think that's his first thought. I just crashed skiing. Let's give a quiz.
Hey, but imagine this scenario. He's like in a he's like driving like a stock car or something, crashes, turns the camera. We got a quiz.
He gets interviewed on NBC and then looks right at the camera. By the way,
we got a quiz. The first question is, why are you still teaching, bro?
It's like the teacher says, hey, back in the 80s, I was actually a NASCAR driver for a minute. He pulls up an old clip and it'd be interviewed by like Benny Parsons. Benny, let's give a quiz now.
That would be good.
Oh, that's a funny story, though. I like this little off the topic tangents. Yeah, that's funny.
We want to touch on the Xfinity and truck race real quick.
I'll be honest. This whole weekend for me was kind of a snoozer with it.
It was a blur, bro. I mean,
the closing laps of the Xfinity.
There's more
race
to talk about
exciting.
The Xfinity one, because that was honestly very exciting watching Austin Hill chase him down.
Hey, Chandler Smith, though. Hey, man.
Choke job.
Chandler, bro. Ooh. Look. I've done a video on you back in 2018. I know of your potential. I know your game, you know, from the words of Shaq, you know, I know your game. I'm aware of your game, but what was that though? You had that race won and you just let it go, bro. Like congratulations to Austin Hill though. Two of the first three races.
That was a heck of a drive by him. I got to say that.
Austin Hill had the drive of his life. And honestly, we're going to Atlanta. It could be 3 of 4.
I'll spoil it. I'm picking Austin Hill for Atlanta. That's my pick.
Are you picking him this weekend at Phoenix?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Back to you.
It was really odd, though, seeing the end of that race, like how fast he fell off. Like the first real kind of moment for me was when he had trouble getting around Tyler Reddick. I was like, why are you having that much trouble getting around a lap car this late in the race? Like, your car is so much better. And then you see the interval going down and down and down. You're like, oh my god, this is gonna happen. It's not even a lap to go, and you're already second. How did you do this? Like, that was sort of my Spark Notes version of my reaction to it.
Oh, hey, really quick, guys. Sorry, I had accidentally said Atlanta was this weekend. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry, little slip up. But I didn't catch it either. Yeah, but so I just exposed myself. Wow, man. All right. Anyways, no. So Austin Hill, though, true championship contender. I could see him winning three of the first five races this season. And that's crazy. I mean, RCR is back, bro. RCR is back as a whole. Like,
yeah, with Kyle Busch.
Well, in the Xfinity Series, they really haven't been gone. They really haven't.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, as a whole, though, it's great to see them, you know, like compete for championships in every series.
When was that? That Reddick championship was 19, right? So basically hasn't been, I guess last year was Gibbs, but it was basically Junior Motorsports for a long time. That nine cars won like
there was
championships.
I think 2020 they had
I forgot all about Hemric. I forgot Gibbs has won the last two. I forgot about Hemric's in 2021. Was he in a Gibbs car? Wait, yeah, he was in a Gibbs car.
Yeah.
I panicked for a second. I thought he was in a Colley car. No, that was the Gibbs year. Yeah, well, either way, RCR, I mean, two cars and Austin Hill looks dominant. Like, geez.
Hey, Chandler Smith, though. Hey, dude. Hey, don't ever do that again. That was crazy. That was crazy, though.
Don't you ever.
It wasn't like an obvious mistake. You know, he just didn't save his stuff. Hey, I don't know.
Look, I'll put it like this, too. Like, I was multitasking. You know, I was working on one of my YouTube shorts, which, by the way, you can check them out on Black Flags Matter. Famous plug. Anyways, I was working on one of those.
We've already plugged one of your videos today.
Yes. Yeah. I'm shameless. I'm sorry.
We're going to look at the comments for that one, too.
But no. So it was around like 8 laps to go. I'm like, oh, okay, Chandler Smith's got this in the bag. I look up. It's the final lap. Austin Hill. I'm like, wait, what the hell just happened? So I was caught off guard. Then I saw the replay. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, hey, you know, Austin Hill, I mean, he's a veteran, though. You know, Chandler Smith still has a long way to go. But it just sucked, man. Like, he was so far gone. Well, and I thought, you know, he's going to win that race.
Well, I will say the other thing of the two lower races that memorable for me, other than my pick winning the truck race and pretty much all of ours, but one pick winning the truck race.
Hey, chill.
Hey, if we gotta plug your videos, we're gonna plug your fails too.
Stop, chill.
Well, oh, and there goes part of my headphones. But for me, the other memorable part of it was the fact that like three or four pit crews didn't make it until
I saw our boy Tig running in.
Yeah.
I've never seen something like that before.
Can I make one more point on the Xfinity race? Yes. I will give Chandler Smith this credit. He outran Kyle Busch all day.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It was the best calling car.
Okay. I'll give him credit for that.
Okay, you know what? I'll kind of take my criticism back.
I know you're so hard.
You did finish
ahead
of Kyle Busch, though. But I was like, dude, that win was yours, though, man.
Yeah, no, it was. It was the best chance he's had so far.
If his mom was there, I know she would say, Chandler, you blew it.
Damn it, Chandler. What'd you do that for? But no. But yeah, and then we had a truck race too, but
it was just Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch won a truck race and everyone else was there.
Yeah. And I'm an idiot for picking John Hunter because he freaking crashed out. And my power was out, so I didn't even get to see the first half.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's the lightning round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast.
It's the lightning round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Jarrett, what do we have on tap for tonight?
We got a couple things, including an announcement at the end of the of it that I got for y'all. Fun one. But a couple things here. So starting off, Todd Gilliland will run the number 36 cup car for front row. Front row still exists.
Oh, too soon.
Oh, no.
The South Boston Speedway is now being put up for sale. Hopefully it's not a booming real estate market.
Ugh.
Now, we talked about one of the Chicago mayor candidates last week and their thoughts of the Chicago street race. Now we have the talk from the other candidate. Brandon Johnson has said they're going to be looking into the NASCAR contract and making more decisions about the race with the rest of the city.
I still don't know. I don't know if I like that wording because that just makes me think he's saying we're gonna look at it and just look. This is too much. Why are we doing this?
That's a reading between the lines.
Yeah. He did the more politically correct way of doing it. Yeah. Surprisingly enough, Martinsville Speedway is going to be taking out a piece of the Hail Melon wall to preserve it, and the one they had driving the forklift to take it out, Ross Chastain.
That's cool though.
Now I don't know what they're going to do with it, but
Hall of Fame. That's Hall of Fame.
Please Hall of Fame. Please Hall of Fame.
At least for the time being.
Is the car in the Hall of Fame right now, or where's the car?
I think so. I think they might reunite them in the hall. No. It'd be funny if they just like press it into the wall as a display.
Just hot glue it.
And then just get like a smoke machine so every now and then just kind of smoke coming out of it.
Yeah. I'd be down. Kimi Räikkönen will be back in the 91 for Project 91 in Trackhouse at Coda.
The Iceman cometh.
That's going to be a good race.
Get Kimi Räikkönen versus Taylor last lap, baby. Please. Right. Bring back the real quick.
With Allmendinger looking on. But and Alex Bowman too, Danny. I'm sorry, I forgot about him.
All right, I don't really think those two are gonna win it, but that's just me.
Jarrett, what do we got?
All right, so we had talked about this amongst the four of us the last couple of weeks, and we finally came up with a way to do this to involve you guys at home. So it's NASCAR's 75th anniversary season, and in the 50th anniversary season, they had the 50 greatest drivers, and now. You know, we've talked about doing 75 greatest drivers or that people should. We want to do our own. So what we're going to do is the four of us are all going to make up our own top 75 NASCAR drivers of all time list, aggregate them all together, and have our definitive podcast list. But we want to add a at-home viewership kind of, you know, the audience version of this. So if you look down in the description of this podcast, as well as if you're watching back afterwards in the what will be the top comment, you can go to weeklypodcastguest@gmail.com and submit your top 75 list in a full email. We will average all of the people who give their list, as long as it's serious. Like, I'm put Cody Ware above, you know, Dale Earnhardt. We're going to know it's a joke list. So put your top 75 list in that email by April 19th, and we will average all of those together and then with ours, and starting May 17th all the way till the last podcast before the playoffs, which would be August 23rd, we each week will be giving each five drivers in a particular group, starting with 71 through 75 all the way down to our top five throughout the summer. Something to kind of have fun with, follow along with, and we want you guys to all be a part of it as well. So weeklypodcastguest@gmail.com. You can leave your top 75 in an email. We will see it, average them all together, and average them with us. And have that a month or so from now, a little over a month from now, a month and a half from now, on April 19th is the deadline. And we can't wait to see what you guys got.
I love it. I cannot wait. Denny Delivers is already saying number one. Yeah. Denny Hamlin. Yeah. Need for Speed, number one. Ty Dillon.
Norm Benning. I can't wait.
Like, it's going to be a fun, like, our lists are going to be pretty reasonable, and then we're going to compare them to the chat, so it's going to be hilarious.
We're going to have like, an aggregating process amongst the rest of us.
And then, meanwhile, Darian's going to make the 75 busts of all time.
Oh, that's is there that many busts?
That's a lot of homework.
I don't know. Darian and I did a top 10, and it was scraping the last bit of that at the bottom.
Hey, there's my number one pick right there. My number one.
Tia Norfleet.
Yes, sir.
Tia Norfleet.
Yes, sir. Tia Norfleet.
No. That would be your number one bust of all time.
But yeah, so we got that.
We got Todd Blue.
Anyways, that'll do it for this edition of the Lightning Round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast.
If you did a 75 greatest busts in NASCAR history and you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, you probably would get to Casey Kane.
Hey, look, man, listen, man. Ooh. Look, I know
that was my version of a segue.
Yeah, look, I know I like doing my bust videos, but that would be like the major. That'd be, I would be considered a giant hater for doing a 75.
To be clear, I don't want to sound like a giant hater. I'm not saying Case Kane was a bust, but according to Kyle Petty, he was an unfulfilled potential, just like Ryan Blaney is currently. Do y'all see this quote? I assume everyone saw this quote. It made the rounds.
No,
everyone was talking about it.
I didn't see it. What did it say? Everybody.
I mean, he said, oh, I don't have the exact quote pulled up, but it was he said, Ryan Blaney, he's potential unfulfilled. Everybody talks about what he can do, but he never does anything. That was a rough paraphrasation.
I can pull up the actual quote. Just give me a second.
But I don't know. Yeah. What do you guys think? Do you think he's fair to compare? He also compared him directly to Casey Kane. He said Blaney is the new Casey Kane. Casey Kane won 18 races in his career. Blaney's at 7. Year. Yeah, and, 6 of which came in 2006.
I just want to say this too. No matter what side you're on here, I don't agree with being like Brett Griffin of Couch Racer and suddenly bringing up Kyle Petty stats, because what the F does Kyle Petty have to do with this? In my opinion, he just simply said this.
I saw it in my comments, and I see a few here. Kyle Petty, he's not saying he's better than Ryan Blaney. To bring up that Petty didn't win as many races, he's also an unfulfilled potential. If anything, that makes him more of an expert on the subject.
I was just about to say, I mean, look, Kyle Petty was the first third-generation driver in the sport when he came in back in 1979. So he knows a thing or two about, you know, fulfilling a legacy, meeting up to expectations and stuff. And also, just really quick, Kyle Petty was not a bum driver in the late 80s and early 90s. He was actually solid.
It's time with Sabco, he was a real threat. Yeah.
People forget that he was part of the 1992 championship battle.
Yeah.
He was one of the six.
He was right in the mix. And also, too, you know, he took time away from, you know, his performances and stuff to help his late son. So that was he made that very public too. And also too, just the fact that he continues to race after his passing deserves your respect alone. But to the Ryan Blaney comparison, first of all, the reaction from Blaney fans is very crazy to me, because Casey Kane is by no means a bum at all. 18 wins. I remember, you know, 2006, he had 6 wins just like that, you know, when it felt like, man, it's taking Casey Kane forever to win a single Cup Series race. I remember his rookie season. That was the first season I watched NASCAR, you know, a full season. And man, that was frustrating. But look, Kyle Petty to me, he was speaking facts. Now, the way he worded it, though, saying he does nothing, I think that's the main reason why some people were pretty PO'd. But I think what he meant was, I think what he meant by when he said does nothing, like he doesn't win monumental races. And then some of these other racetracks he has won at. As a matter of fact, let's pull up his 7 career wins, and I will go over single track he has won at.
We're going to nitpick this, aren't we? Oh, boy.
No, hey,
to be fair, his first win was impressive as hell.
No.
He had to hold off Kyle Busch.
His second one was a Mickey.
No, actually, he had to hold off Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick in the closing laps.
Who I would argue were the best two drivers of that decade.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And that was the year before the big three, but they were still really good.
They were still good, yeah. So, 2017, Pocono. 2018, you have the Charlotte Roval. Now we know how that ended.
That one was a fluke.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
But then his next two wins in the next two seasons combined from 2019 to 2020, Talladega. So, I mean, that's a pretty long, you're going a pretty long way without winning a race for a while. And then.
And that one, I think, was it was a Monday race, and there were some cars that got out of it and a crash or something like that.
Yes. And the next one, Atlanta, that's 2021. His final three wins to date, all coming during the 2021 season. Atlanta, and this was Atlanta before they turned it into a super speedway. Michigan, and then Daytona in August.
I was there for one of them. Jared, I think, was there for for two of them.
So we were there for Blaney's last win to date.
I was there last year for his All-Star win. So I will say that he's won the All-Star race. That's a big race.
He won it twice in one night.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Can't forget about the All-Star race. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. But then also too, you, I'm sorry. I'm almost done with the stats. I promise. But then top fives, 61 top fives, 114 top tens, 9 poles, and a career average finish of 15.5.
Yeah, no, Rosh Crash Dane's super chat is extremely accurate. He says, another similarity between Kane and Blaney, the Cougars love them both.
Oh,
That's a fact. That's pretty true.
That's a fact. Does Blaney have Allstate?
I was going to say, can we get Allstate on board to redo a commercial?
Yeah, and also, too, Blaney also had 9 poles. So when you look at those stats, you're like, okay, well, I mean, it's not bad or whatever. The problem is, though, where you look at where he's finished in points and stuff, and I'm not talking about playoff points here. I'm talking about just, you know, pure consistent standings. In only one season, he finished inside the top 5. So, you know, I hear all this talk about, oh, Blaney's the next man up for a championship. And I'm sitting here going like, Where do you see this at? I mean, he hasn't been a very good driver yet. Yeah, like
I remember in 2020, I got so much flack on this show, my channel, backseat drivers. So many people in the comments thought I was crazy when I said that he would get eliminated in the first round of playoffs, and he did.
Yeah,
I was probably one of those people.
Yeah. He's been to the round of 8. 3 times, I believe. He's been really close to the championship 4, but he hasn't been to the championship 4. His teammate Joey Logano, meanwhile, has won 2 championships as long as Blaney's been over at Team Penske. So, no, I think it's fair to say he hasn't quite lived up to peak expectations, but I think that's also a compliment. I think go back to that win at Pocono in 2017, or go back to, I guess, 2018 when he joins Penske, the flagship Penske team. I think everyone looks at a young Ryan Blaney there. You saw what he had done at Pocono. You'd seen what he'd done in Xfinity, his whole career up to that point. I think everyone would have said Blaney's probably a future championship winner at some point. I think I would have safely said that at the time. And I think even now there's a very good chance that happens. But I also think Casey Kane, if you go back to 2006, when he won those 6 races, I think everyone in the garage would have said Casey Kane is a championship contender. Kane never won a title. And the rate Blaney's going, he hasn't been to a championship before. So there's still a lot of time. That's why I don't want to make any definitive comparisons. But so far, I do think the comparison to Kane is accurate. Kane was really good, never quite reached his peak potential. Blaney, so far, has been really good, really consistent, but hasn't quite reached his peak potential.
I got to say, I disagree with this one commenter in the chat. Flint005 says, Ryan is barely any better than his dad Dave was. Whoa, I have to disagree on that.
Whoa. And also too, Dave, he's a very renowned dirt racer.
Dave was a big dirt guy, and if you haven't looked enough into his dirt background, I recommend that you do, because truth be told, he came into NASCAR very late in his career. Who knows what it would have been like if he would have came in sooner. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I don't know what's Ryan's dirt stats.
He was more always into asphalt light models, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So who won the battle of the Blaneys in the SRX last year? I forgot.
Didn't they both wreck?
Did they?
I think Ryan had a better finish.
I think Ryan Blaney. I'd like to kind of reel this back in and break down the I want to break down a bit of the comparison between Kane and Blaney. And I think that's where, I think that's part of also why people are getting upset, because I think we can say that Ryan Blaney consistently feels like more of a contender than Casey Kane did early in his career. If you look at Kane's career early on, 04, he was always coming up close. 05 wasn't very good. 06 won all those races. 07 wasn't very good. Mid pack the rest of his time in the 9 and the 4. And then with Hendrick, it was like started out well and then just sort of slowly went down. Whereas with Ryan Blaney, every year it still always feels like it's right at the edge, right at the edge, right at the edge. And so I was looking at, you know, we looked at Ryan Blaney's first 7 wins. I mean, you look at Casey Kane's first 7, only one of his first 7 wins is not at a mile and a half or 2 mile intermediate, because in 2006, those 6 wins, Evernham just had that figured out. Like they nailed it. I mean, dude, Scott Riggs was almost going to win 2 of those races that year. And I, no disrespect to Scott Riggs, but he is no Ryan Blaney. Like, and he is no Casey Kane.
Scott Riggs fans in shambles.
So I think that's also where part of it is, on top of being the messenger and how it was delivered, is Casey Kane, other than maybe one or two years, never really felt like he could be an elite driver. He always had elite moments, but never felt like he could be an elite driver. As Ryan Blaney, time after time, I mean, he has put himself in position. It's kind of like my argument with William Byron here. He's at that next step. Like, William Byron's next step is Ryan Blaney, in my opinion, in the sense that Blaney is consistent. He is consistently fast. He is somebody who you can have an outside perspective of being a championship contender every year. But with Blaney, he's not consistently, in my opinion, clutch when it comes to winning races, getting himself in position for championships.
He's a safe, reliable driver, but is he going to be up there in my championship favorites? Probably not.
Well, it's too early to say that, but as of now,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Also, I just have to laugh here because Eric put in his big no into the chat and everyone starts saying it, but right just at the big very beginning of it, someone said, anyone remember Dave Blaney almost win a Daytona 500 in 2012? And everyone's just like, no. I was like, no one remembers.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryan Blaney to me, it is like that. It's like, okay, it'd be like you go to a restaurant and there's all these really weird things and then there's chicken noodle soup. Everyone likes chicken noodle soup. It's something safe. You don't normally pick it. You don't think chicken noodle soup is the greatest thing in the world. But every now and then you get that really good bowl of good soup at a restaurant and you don't want to go kind of outside the box. That's Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney is Campbell's chicken noodle soup as a driver.
And you know what? Look,
it's good. I like chicken noodle soup.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being good. There's nothing wrong with being just good.
And hey, with chicken noodle soup, you just put a little bit of crackers in there. It can be good. You know, the same like Ryan Blaney. If you just put a little bit more in there, it could be really good.
It could be that championship winning bowl of soup.
Like, hey, I love me a good bowl of Ryan Blaney when I'm feeling a little under the weather.
With a nice Brad or Dale Jr. on the side of it.
But let's be real. This is no tomato soup with shreds of cheese and crackers in it. You know, this is no Kyle Larson, if you will.
No.
Anyone want soup?
After the show. Let me ask you guys this question, too. So Ryan Blaney... he almost won both the 2020 and the 2022 Daytona 500. If he wins at least one of those two, does the narrative on him change a little bit more, or does it stay about the same?
I mean, it's difficult to think about it just because of how different the race has become at this point, I think. But I mean, I'll ask this. Does it change how you look at Jamie McMurray? Because I'm not saying they're in the same range necessarily.
I mean, he's still a good driver, closer. But...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that if you have three drivers, Blaney, Kane, and McMurray, you can put them sort of in a same wide bin. The way you look at McMurray, has it changed? Now, Blaney's better than him. Casey Kane was better. I'm just as an example.
And actually, too, as a matter of fact, I believe right now Blaney is tied with McMurray in career wins, I think. Seven, right? Yeah, seven.
So that's kind of my take on it.
Okay.
But I will say this. Seems like McMurray's wins were always bigger ones for some reason.
Hey, this is a random comment. Michael says in the chat, Ryan Blaney's girlfriend is a baddie, though. So I guess he is winning. He doesn't care.
Miss Hooters.
Ryan Blaney doesn't care. Ryan Blaney does not care in the grand scheme of things. He's like, oh, Kyle Petty says something. Oh, well. Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, if he just ends up being a good driver, nothing wrong with that. But if he turns into a championship contender, then, hey, you know, we'll sing his praises, of course.
We need to create a Twitter account that's just different NASCAR drivers as different soups.
NASCAR soup.
Yes.
NASCAR soup.
We're all going to get followed by a NASCAR soup Twitter account tonight. Yeah, that would make me stay on that website longer.
Oh my god.
One of your all's spam burners, can you be NASCAR soup for a minute?
Yeah, we have NASCAR soup in the chat.
Oh man, but yeah, that's about it for me. I mean,
2 hours. Do we want to talk Phoenix?
I think we probably
no, I'd rather talk more soup. This is a soup weekly podcast now.
This show has been so freaking fun, though. It hasn't even felt like 2 hours.
But... No, not at all. I'm putting in the chat a formal request for NASCAR soup.
All right, so this weekend at Phoenix, we've got the Soup 500. I mean, the United Rentals Work United 500. That's a lot of United right there. 312 laps. The race starts at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox and radio coverage on MRN. Weather for Sunday is 83 degrees, mostly sunny, 4% chance of rain. The defending winner of this race is Chase Briscoe. The Xfinity race is the United Rentals 200. This is 200 laps. It starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 with radio coverage on MRN. Weather this Saturday is 79 degrees, partly sunny, a 4% chance of rain. The defending winner of this race is Noah Gregson, so we will see a different winner for sure this weekend. And Darian, get us into the betting odds.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The famous betting odds on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Let's get into the favorites. Kyle Busch is plus 600, followed by Kyle Larson plus 800. And you know what? I might as well just have fun with this. I accidentally put Chase Elliott in by accident. Sorry, I know he was plus 800. I know what could have been, but unfortunately he's not racing. So in his place, William Byron at plus 1,000, Ryan Blaney at plus 1,000, and Denny Hamlin plus 1,100.
So I want to ask you this. Was that more you messed up, or was he actually still on betting odds when you looked it up?
He was still on betting odds. Yeah, he was still on betting odds. Yeah, I thought I had
they had the odds that high for him to say, I've made a miracle, I'm back, I win.
They were like, hey, he's gonna have a fast recovery, right? But no, unfortunately no.
By the way, NASCAR soup is in the chat.
We have NASCAR soup.
I was fast. Anyways, as for the best of the rest, Joey Logano also plus 1,100, Ross Chastain, Christopher Bell, and Martin Truex Jr., all three of them at plus 1,200. Kevin Harvick, this is very interesting. He is only plus 1,600. You know, he's had a solid start to the season, just saying, you know. As for the underdogs, and to Eric's earlier point, if he doesn't get a 30th place car, Chase Briscoe at plus 4,000 is a very, you know, good option to bet on as far as the underdogs, considering the fact that he won this race last year.
And I think he was top five in November, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he was competitive. So we'll see if they unload a tractor or not. We'll find out. Bubba Wallace at plus 4,500. He has a lot of momentum. And so does Brad Keselowski at plus 500. You know, a 5, few 000. People had, you know, some, or, yeah, 5,000, excuse me. But a lot of people had written him off, but he's doing well. And then Austin Cindric plus 5,000. And finally, Eric Jones at plus 35. Or excuse no, me, no, at no. plus 9,500. Excuse me. Yeah, sorry, getting a little carried away there. But yeah, that'll do it for the betting odds. Now for the NWP Fantasy League standings. We have a very close battle. Appreciate all of you lovely people playing. And I don't know what the heck. Oh my gosh, NASCAR is putting a freaking ad thing on here. Dude, let me just click on the. Let me click on the standings. this. Oh my gosh. Anyways,
it's baby. All ads.
There's this random ad just popped up. It's weird. As for the NWP Fantasy League standings, S the baby is in P1, followed by Toyota Tough. Bubba's Sports Talk, followed by Trevor Sports 98, the defending champion, and finally. Claudia, aka Danny B wife, is sitting inside the top five. I just need to I need to start copying her picks because I'm not in championship contention. And as for the NWP Fantasy League 2, Natty City Racing is P1, and then well, this is a very interesting name. Oh no, dot dot, we suck again. Here's the kicker. Blaney's pit crew. That's what it says at the end.
Sounds like a Titans fan.
Yeah. And then in P3, unofficial Illinois representative Josh Wise. If that's a real Josh Wise, that'd be funny. 4 is a girly man 05. And then tied for P5 is YRB89, followed by Race Roar 48.
We might have to do pre-show vetting on this pretty soon.
Oh man,
it's girly man 05.
Yep. Hey, I love these names, man. I love it. Anyways, thank y'all for playing, man. Continue to play. Awesome. Anyways, let's get to our fantasy standings.
Yeah, speaking of points and stuff, Eric, nice job on your season so far with 69 points.
Nice.
The chat is minus 7. That means they need to gain 7 points to also have 69 points.
Nice.
Jarrett needs 16 points to get the 69 points.
Nice.
I need 18 points to get the 69 points.
Nice.
And Darian needs 26 points to get the 69 points.
Last place, nice.
No, it's not nice. That was Joe and Joe. Bro, I suck. Bro, I'm P3. What are you doing? Nice.
Nice, nice.
I'm an idiot, bro. I should have picked Kyle Busch, bro. I'm dumb, man. What can I say, man?
And here's the pick point system, by the way, able to get Eric's evil mugging off the screen so you can keep track at home in case maybe he didn't have nice points. Maybe he had one nice plus one. All right, what do we got next? Come on, we got to get this moving.
Yeah, let's pick the Xfinity race, and we'll start off with Mr. Nice himself, Eric.
Justin Allgaier. Oh. He's going to win. He loves Phoenix. He's always good here. I feel like there's less on the line. He's not racing for a championship this time around, so I think he'll just settle in. He'll get the dub.
You're like, he's going to win because he doesn't have to be clutch.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying he's not clutch. I mean, I just think the spring race favors him. Allgaier. He was charging hard. What, didn't he finish third this last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was up there. Yeah,
he's got some momentum.
He was good.
Or was he second? He was in the top three.
Oh, yeah. I think he passed Chandler, so I think he got second.
I give you crap for this, but I'm actually going to be picking Justin Allgaier this week as well. He has four top tens in the last four races, led in three of them, consistently one of the fastest out there, whether he's facing Josh Berry or facing Brandon Jones or Kyle Busch. It doesn't matter.
Kyle Busch this week.
He's very fast. So I'm going at the seven.
Fool me once. Shame on me. Fool me twice. Shame on you. Do not let me down, Kyle Busch. Ooh. It's the Xfinity series.
Crying out loud.
All right. Don't worry, Kyle. I'm done playing now. All right. I'm going to go with you from now on. Kyle Busch.
All right, Eric, we made the right decision. We picked the opposite of Darian.
I'm just saying, Kyle Busch got outrun by a 19-year-old last week. Or how old is Chandler Smith?
Hey, man. He was a little rusty coming off of retirement. So you know.
He was probably out late after winning the truck race. Yeah. That's fair.
The chat seems to clearly be going with Justin Allgaier as well.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, okay.
I see a 00. Hey, Cole Custer was irrelevant, bro. He was outside the top 10. I was shocked by that.
He's going to have to – I was pretty high on my auto club. He's going to have to show me something for a little bit.
Did he get outrun by Riley Herbst?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Oh, come on, Cole.
Herbst showed some – to his credit, Herbst showed some real speed, though.
Hey, he's doing good. He's doing better.
Herbst has 100% for top 10 in his Cup Series career, so I may not –
Goat talk best here. Rick Ware, top 75 list.
Rick Ware one for one.
Yeah, I'm putting him on top 75, guys.
All right.
Suck pick for Cup?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah. Who do you think, Eric?
Tyler Reddick. I remember a couple of years ago, he showed out when he ran like top three, top two until blowing a tire. I don't know. I just don't see it. I thought he was turning a corner at Vegas last week. He drove up into the top 15 in no time.
He finished.
And then he kind of stopped there. Like, he started to charge a little bit late in stage three before, I forget why he got shuffled back. Oh, he got really loose. I remember they were showing him. He was up to like sixth, and then he almost wiped out, and that knocked him back out to like 10th or 11th. But, man, I don't know. I just, even last week, Bubba outran him by far, and I don't know. I don't feel it.
I swear. Hendrick fans are very much people who will get on you if you get something wrong. But I hate doing this. This guy isn't fast here. It's his home track. Alex Bowman. Prove me wrong, Blake Harris and Alex Bowman. Prove me wrong.
Save him, Blake. Save him.
That's not a bad one because he's been straight doo-doo after that 2016 race there. Yeah. But I'm going to agree with Eric. I'm going to agree with Eric, though, on this one. And I think Tyler Reddick, he's been straight doo-doo to start this year, so it's going to continue.
Dang, what is this? The freaking shit on Tyler Reddick segment? Because I picked him too.
Doo-doo on Tyler Reddick.
Oh, my God.
To his credit, though, the chat is taking the safe pick of Almirola at the same. So.
Yeah.
Our original.
If Almirola wins, do you think they – lighten up on that.
Yeah, he's got to win.
Let's not forget, guys, his last win was New Hampshire, a similar track.
That's true. I feel like if
you could be regretting this.
We don't have to change the rules midseason, Jared, but going in the future, I think we should make it if your suck pick wins, you should like -5. Something
ooh,
like that.
I like
oh.
that.
I remember
2021, I picked Bowman to suck twice and he won the race.
No, yeah, you're right, Jared. There'd have to be some stipulations. Like you have to pick top 25 in points or something. Okay. I don't know.
But anyways, the chat, they're going with Amarola, of course. Of course, they're going with him.
Now, who's the underdog or the dark horse?
You all may be saying he's straight doo-doo, but I remember that 2016 race, and he didn't have Blake Harris on the pit box. Three straight top 10s to start the year, make it 4. I think he's going for a top 5. Alexander Bowman. Is that his full name? Does he go by Alexander? Does his mother call him Alexander?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be shocked.
It could be short for like Alexi or something. Alexis. Alexis Bowman will win at Phoenix.
I don't think it's Alexis.
It might.
You only remember that because Matt Kenseth got taken out with him.
This is what I mean. I'm not biased.
What happened in 2016, bro?
I'm not going to lie. I've seen some of the comments you've gotten for being a, quote, Bowman hater, and I've wondered if it was because of that moment.
No, I'm not a Bowman. That was Kenseth Spotter, and I love Kenseth Spotter that year. Chris Osborne's great. I don't know if he still spots. I know he's had off-the-track things affect his career, but he was a great spotter. Just made a mistake.
So someone said Bowman's not a dark horse. At this track, he kind of is.
Okay, maybe that's fair. Well,
if Larson's
not
a dark horse at the super speedways, then Bowman can be a dark horse.
Yeah. Well, and he wasn't one of the top 5 or 6 or even best of the rest, I don't think, in Darien's odds. I have to go back and look.
He wasn't what? Can you say that again?
Darien, the odds didn't have him as one of the top guys. I don't even think he was best of the rest.
He is he's plus 3,000. He's plus 3,000.
Oh shit! So, those odds.
Yeah.
Hey, put a consider a top 5 bet on him.
Yeah.
Well,
I bet those are not going to be the closing odds.
To get back to our picks here, I'm going to go with the guy. You know, we're talking about underdog, talking about dark horse, talking about overperforming how they're supposed to be running. I'm going to go with the guy who was in the rumors of being in the 9 car this week. 3 straight top 20s for Corey LaJoie. That 7 team, while not showing, you know, even front row speed, I would say, I still think that they're showing a ton more speed. They're basically performing how we thought they would last year. So I'm going to go Corey LaJoie. I think he will surprise people and maybe get another top 20 this week.
So really quick, full disclosure, I completely forgot who I picked for the underdog. So I'll just go with Brad Keselowski.
It was
Brad
Daniel Keselowski. Suarez.
Oh, was it? Oh, that sounds way better. All right. No, I'm switching up. Daniel Suarez. Yes, he has had solid speed from the very beginning of the season. I mean, at Vegas, he was one of the fastest Chevys, but unfortunately just couldn't get the track position game to go his way. So Daniel Suarez, man, he showed some flashes here in the past for brief moments. So, you know, Daniel Suarez is going to be getting some help from Ross Chastain on how to run good here.
Two things. One, it wasn't your turn. Stay in your place, basement boy.
Oh, wasn't? Oh my god!
I'm just kidding,
dude.
Basement boy.
We're so late. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna be myself.
I'm literally just kidding, Darien. Second, you took my pick anyway, so we both agreed on that.
Let's not go this late.
And I saw the chat put 9. A lot of 9s. A lot of 99s.
It's 9s and 99s.
Okay. Darien, I really feel harsh. I feel bad.
That must be like off the podium problems.
Bro, it's on your channel. And I was just like, nope. I didn't even realize it.
Gave me the stiff arm.
Gave me the Derrick Henry stiff arm.
Illegal hands to the face. Defense. Oh, wait, it'd be offense.
But no, everything you said, his team's pretty good here. I think it's Suarez, pretty underdog.
I am basement boy, though. I mean,
everyone's seemingly saying the 9. They're saying Josh Berry.
Well, give him the 9.
Yeah, give him the 9 then. All right. And now for the main event. Who's going to win? Who's going to win at Phoenix? Eric?
I accidentally kind of sort of spoiled my pick during the very first segment of tonight's show.
You did.
But this man, he was in the headlines this week, getting some criticism, some of it fair, some of it a little too far. But at Phoenix last year, he was top five in both races. I think he wins that fall race. If it wasn't his teammate out front running for the championship, I think you would have raced him a little harder. But he led over 100 laps in both races. Ford struggled at the intermediates the past couple weeks, especially last week. But this is an all-new style track, an all-new rules or aero package. I think Ford will be better. I think Ryan Blaney will be better. Ryan Blaney is going to win at Phoenix.
Well, I actually agree with that. And the reasoning I have, too, is because of its adaptability at Phoenix. Other than Joey Logano, he has been the best out there at Phoenix year after year. I looked at the last five races. He has a top 10 in every one of those races, three of them top fives, two of those coming last year. And in that time as well, he's led 321 laps. He's basically led a Phoenix race plus nine laps of overtime in the last 5 years. So I'm going to go with Blaney. I'm going to fall into the trap that Kyle Petty says we're all falling into and say at some point he's got a breakthrough. And I say at Phoenix, he breaks through to win.
I'm going with someone who last year proved that they can be a legit contender, unlike some people. I'm just kidding. But he did finish second and third here at this track last year. I'm going with Ross Chastain. He did that, honestly, with horrible starting positions. In the spring, he started 17th. In the championship race, he started 25th. If they could just get a better qualifying run, I think they can bring the speed to get him where he needs to be. I think Chastain could win this race.
He won at this track his rookie season, so maybe you might, he's returning to the track for the first time as a Chevy driver. Maybe history repeats itself. He's already off to a solid start. Hopefully he gets two of the first four wins for 2023. KFB, Kyle Busch.
So when you said in the Xfinity race, you're riding with him, you mean you're really riding with him?
I learned my lesson last week. So no, don't need to do that again. I'm already so far behind, man. And we just started, bro. And
basement I'm already 26 points
behind. Yeah, basement boy. So Danny said that's the truth.
That is your nickname for the year, basement boy.
Until I get out of the basement.
And then basically, whoever's last year, basement boy.
Yeah, we're gonna start doing that now. Yeah.
Hey, let's make them basement chat. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to do. It's hard to do when they copy us each week.
Yeah, true that. But Chad, who are you going with? I'm seeing Blaney's. I'm seeing Busch.
It's a mix of 12-1, I think.
Okay.
I saw a lot of Chastains early on, but I've seen more Blaney's since then. So I think Blaney and Chastain.
I'm gonna do a poll. Hey,
I know this is off NASCAR topic, but it's NASCAR owned and it's actually pretty big. Breaking news.
Today,
and we didn't really talking about it. We got the breaking news ticker and everything. IMSA has whacked the winning Rolex 24 entry for manipulating tire pressure data. The 60 car can keep the win, the watches and the trophy, but they will lose 200 team and driver points. They lose all team and driver endurance cup points, loss of any race prize money, plus a $50,000 fine. And Mike Shank is on probation through June 30th, as well as loss of annual credential and indefinite suspension of their lead team engineer.
And that's, I saw that they fired the person who apparently was made the mistake. Like the team actually like fired the person.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I don't that's know. Who so
they bent them over and brought the belt out.
Yeah.
Wow. But
they still got those Rolex watches. That's what I care most.
That's
about.
That's not a belt.
They beat them with the Rolexes at that point.
They brought out the belt, then put that down, extension cord, then put that down, then freaking paddles, put that down. They gave them everything.
The wire hanger that they bent over.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's brutal, dude. You were saying all this stuff. Oh, we have a breaking news ticker. I forgot.
Yep.
Well, this is awesome. I love the graphic.
We can move on now. I just wanted to bring that up. I kind of wanted to use that ticker, I'll be honest.
I just love oh, he can't do that.
And
every time I see that in the chat,
we do have the chat's pick poll. It says, "Answer me, basement boy, Ross Chastain or Ryan Blaney."
They seem to be leaning Chastain. I'm actually a little surprised.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe there's a lot of Kyle Petty supporters.
Them cheating Acuras.
Are we done now?
Right?
can we go home now?
Can we go now?
It's up to you. You're the host.
I think this is a good time now to talk about, you know.
I'm muting you. We're going.
No, goodbye. Goodbye.
Don't we'll break out the man, though.
Ready? Turn.
Unbelievable, man. Way to keep your head in it. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'm done with it.
It's your face. That's
Steve, you look beautiful. You look great.
Ridiculous, man.